All right. Got Aaron Rodgers next to me.
If only. Tie him up so he can't play tomorrow.
And welcome back, everyone. It is episode number 54.
Can you believe it?
Of Thirst and Goal. Yes, I can believe it, Ben. How are you doing tonight?
I am wonderful. It's a little chilly out here in our outdoor studio where football should be played and podcast should be recorded. It's about 44 degrees out here. I can see Friday's breath.
Somewhere around there. Yeah, we got the fire close to us crackling in the background. We have our hand warmers. I have mine tied to my chest, so I'm nice and toasty right now.
Yeah, if only Lamar Jackson had some hand warmers for himself tonight. Friday, how was your week this week?
It was good, Ben. I mean, you know, I spent a little bit of time with you.
That's true.
This week at work. I saw you a couple of times. You came in. It was nice to see you.
Absolutely.
During the week. It's usually only Saturdays, but, you know, I can never get enough of Ben.
Yeah, my week was pretty good. A little bit long. You know, I only worked the 4 days, but it was still a long...
Yeah, you had a short week. You had a short
long
week.
Long 4 days. Emotionally and spiritually, it was a long week. Franny. What are you drinking over there tonight?
Tonight, Ben, I got the Woodford Reserve Rye with a little bit of Coke, a little bit of tonic. You know, I usually, when I come over, I usually drink that one can of Coke. So I have a little bit of leftover Coke, just add a little bit of tonic, and I have that rye. It's actually not that bad. It has like a sort of sour sweetness to it. What about you, Ben?
And that's the Woodford Reserve?
Woodford Reserve Rye.
Oh, I like it. I am continuing to drink the Cooper and Kings, or Copper and Kings?
I think it's Copper and
Copper
Kings.
Copper and Kings Brandy Company.
Moon of Jupiter gin.
Yeah. Actually, I don't have the name in front of me, but it's a very, very good gin, heavily spiced from a gin brandy company or a brandy company that's making a line of gins down in Louisville, Kentucky. So I'm
Louisville.
So I am happy to have it. Franny. What are we going to talk about tonight?
Well, tonight, Ben, on the big board, and actually also, apologies for last week. We had some technical difficulties.
That is true. Ben had some technical difficulties.
Sonia joined us late in the podcast, and Ben forgot to set her mic to record.
That is true.
So, I mean, that is true. You could kind of hear her through our mics, but it's just not the same. Sonia's voice didn't come through, and so we do apologize for that, but, you know, those sorts of things will happen. This is our 54th episode, so, you know, eventually we'll have a couple of technical difficulties here and there.
Yeah, so thank you for your patience, one and all. Sonia's a little under the weather.
Yeah, she is.
This evening, but she vows to be back. You know, I have my suspicions that with the Seahawks facing the Green Bay Packers in Lambeau tomorrow, she may not want to talk about that. She's holed up in there holding her Russell Wilson bobblehead and sleeping in her Russell Wilson jersey.
Or Lockett
or
whoever.
Or whoever else.
Marshawn. Does she still have the Hauschka one?
Yeah, she still has the Hauschka.
Okay.
Hauschka and Alexander and Largent and...
Hasselbeck?
No Hasselbeck. I am still looking for a Dave Craig jersey that's not $250 that I can pick up just so she can wear that in the off season. But Friday, what are we going to talk about tonight?
All right, tonight on the big board, Ben, as usual, we have NFL news. We have some housekeeping. We have our wild card recap. Oof. And it was a crazy first slate of games, I guess,
absolutely,
for the divisional round. One shocker in the late game.
Oh, that's crazy.
And we'll do the divisional recap, divisional picks. We actually have two more games for tomorrow. We have our Super Bowl predictions. I was wrong last week, so I'm gonna have to change my prediction. I thought the Saints were gonna go all the way. That didn't happen. We have our shout outs to our fellow podcasters out there. We have Ben's betting corner, still a couple of games to go. So yep, we're gonna have your bets for that, Ben. We have our shot of the evening, we have our beverage of the night, and we have our beer of the evening. And to finish up the show, a little bit more housekeeping, Ben.
Yes, I can't. I mean, this is the most exciting time of year for NFL fans. this is as good as it gets. I mean, typically people think, or people say, that the divisional round weekend is the most exciting weekend of football. Didn't turn out to be the case today, but it did turn out to be the case last week that those wild card games were pretty, pretty good. But we're going to start out with a little bit of NFL news. First up, we have a little bit of drama in good old New England. Tom Brady, will he stay or will he go? We don't know.
No.
New England Patriots coach Bill Belichick acknowledged Sunday morning that Tom Brady is an iconic figure in this organization and said now is not the time to address Tom Brady's future with the franchise. Mike Reese of ESPN Boston reported. In a season-ending news conference about 12 hours after the Patriots were eliminated from the playoffs 20-13 in a loss to the Tennessee Titans, Belichick added that nobody respects Tom more than I do, but mostly deflected questions on the topic, saying, I'm sure there are a lot of questions about the future. Nobody has thought about the future yet, he said. Brady, who is scheduled to become a free agent on March 18th, specifically negotiating a two-year contract that would not allow for a franchise tag, said late Sunday night that retirement was pretty unlikely and, quote, hopefully unlikely. Belichick was prepared with questions on Sunday morning in an exchange with one reporter that edged towards getting testy, saying he didn't have a timeline on when he'd begin discussions about Tom Brady's future. Belichick said, honestly, look, I know it's out there, just like there are a lot of other things out there. We could bring up 50 questions just like that one. I told you what my state is on that, so you can ask all 50 of them, and it's going to be the same answer 50 times. We've been working on Tennessee. It's 12 hours after the game. I'm not going to talk about a lot of things about the future because I'm not prepared to talk about it. Oh, Franny, what do you think about Tom Brady negotiating a contract where they could not franchise him next year? Is he going to stay or is he going to go?
No, he needs to. Where is he going to go? Well, I mean, seriously, realistically, where can he go? You know, I mean, he's such a legend. He's an icon there in Boston. I mean, he can't go anywhere. And Ben's choking on you. Are you all right there, Ben? Is this Brady talk too much for you?
The moons of Jupiter Jin went down the wrong pipe.
It did. But I think, you know, it's time for the Patriots. I mean, it was a disappointing season. They didn't have all the weapons that they usually have. The receiving core was subpar. I mean, they just need to retool and re-energize and lock Brady in for another year to 2 years. I mean, I just don't know where he could go and have the same success that he has had in New England. I mean, he's under the best coach ever of all time. So, I mean, where else is he going to go? To San Diego? I heard San Diego, I mean, not San Diego, but LA come up in discussion. I mean, why would he play for the Chargers? Yeah. I mean, and you brought up earlier Tampa Bay. Why would he go to Tampa Bay?
Well, I mean, Tampa Bay to me seems like an interesting landing spot for him. They've got a great coach. They've got a good, solid core of receivers. They've got a decent running game.
And they have no offensive line. Their offensive line is terrible.
But they do have a pretty good
defense. Brady might
throw
30 interceptions behind that offensive line.
They do have a pretty good defense. Sorry, that...
do you want to pause it and cough it all out? There. He's trying his best, folks. He's really trying his best.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah,
that really went down the wrong pipe. Jesus.
Oh, my God. Okay. Yeah, I think Tampa Bay.
You have your thoughts together now. You're good.
I think Tampa Bay would be a good landing spot for him. I think Chicago would be a decent landing spot for him as well. We're talking about 1 or 2 years. Got to win now.
I know.
We're talking about sort of a Peyton Manning to Denver type of situation.
And
there are very few teams like that out there.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't say that at the time. I can't remember who the coach was in Denver when he won those championships with the Denver Broncos, Peyton Manning, that is. But that was a really, you know, they had a stout defense, they had decent receivers, and he was able to roll right in there, get himself a championship, and move on.
Yeah, but that's because they had a strong defense.
You know, Tampa's got a really strong defense.
It's good. It's a good defense, but it's not, you know, at those Denver levels when they won the Super Bowl. I mean, when they won the second time around with Peyton Manning, he was barely throwing the ball 15 yards down the field. I mean, Tom Brady can still chuck it around, and I think the best place he could go and still stay is with New England. I mean, he doesn't, there's nowhere else that he can go and have the same sort of success, really.
I mean, Tampa Bay ranked 12th against the pass last year and first against the run this past year. I mean, and they've got Mike Evans down there. They've got...
They don't have Warren Sapp.
They don't have Warren. But they've got a really good core of receivers down there, tall receivers that can create separation.
And yeah, they've got
an amazing coach. An amazing coach. And Jameis Winston, we talked about it last week in his press conference, did not instill a lot of confidence that he has matured over the course of his 5 years in the league. So if Arians could cut bait with Winston, or if Winston wants $35 million a year or $30-plus million a year, and they simply can't make that contract happen, I think that Tampa could be an interesting landing spot. The Raiders could be an interesting landing spot for him as well. They've got a stockpile of draft picks still going into next year. They've got a decent core of receivers, an awesome tight end, a stud running back who's young and ready to roll. I think that that's a possibility as well.
I mean, it is fun to talk about, but my prediction is he will stay with the New England Patriots. That would be his smartest move. I mean, the fans would be devastated if he left. I mean, not that I care about the fans.
I mean, but, Boston fans, I mean, they're as fickle as they come.
He's a living legend over
that.
That's
true.
That's like, you know, Jordan in his prime leaving Chicago. That's like Kobe leaving L.A. in his prime.
It's like Joe Montana leaving.
Okay. That was different. Okay,
but San Francisco,
Joe Montana
49ers.
Didn't win 6 championships. He wasn't there for 20 years.
It's like Brett Favre leaving Green Bay.
But also he didn't have the same type of success that
Well, no
Tom
one
Brady.
Has ever had that kind of success.
Exactly. This has never happened before, and I don't see him leaving New England and going elsewhere. I mean, he can't it's why would you chase rings elsewhere when you've won 6 with New England? And you can still potentially win another one. Their team is good enough to still come back next year, you know, retool a little bit, get some new guys, get some new receivers, you know, maybe a running back. Their defense was pretty darn good this year.
Don't know. And I also have a sneaking suspicion that Bill Belichick might not be all that disappointed if Tom Brady were to move on at 43 years old. So, I think that there may be a confluence of opinion there in New England. Bob Kraft is going to say what he's going to say. But if Jared Stidham is any good, if Bill Belichick believes that he can win games with Jared Stidham, he's 23 years old.
He won games with Matt Cassel. So I think Belichick could coach up any quarterback, whoever comes in. But I still think Brady is their best option. I think it's the best option for Brady.
Okay.
I don't know.
Well, there is someone that has an opinion about it.
And who's
and
that?
His name is Antonio Brown. We have to bring up Antonio Brown.
We value his opinion.
New England Patriots stunning 20-13 loss to the Tennessee Titans this past Saturday's wild card game quickly brought out the trolls on social media. After all, the defeat meant the Patriots would be missing the Super Bowl only the second time in the last 6 seasons. So why not rub it in when you can? It also inspired a few messages from Antonio Brown, the wide receiver who has been out of a job since being cut by the Pats back in September after sexual assault misconduct allegations against him surfaced, Don Colicchio of Fox News reported. Brown said, "What could have been?" Brown wrote in an Instagram post, which included a photo of himself embracing Patriots coach Bill Belichick during a game against the Miami Dolphins, the only game that Brown played for the team and this season before he was let go. "Call me," Brown wrote simply in a Twitter message as he retweeted a CBS Sports video on Tom Brady's post-defeat news conference. This week, Antonio Brown also blamed the Saints' defeat on the Antonio Brown curse.
Yeah.
That if you do not sign Antonio Brown and do not show him the proper respect, things will happen to you that are not advantageous.
And Raiders, too.
This guy can't just not be a douchebag. It's just not possible.
The reason I got up from the table, Ben, is because of the our agreement, the drinking game that we've had for the last few months. It's been quite a few months now. So if you say anything negative about Antonio Brown, Le'Veon Bell, or any team in your division, or if I say anything about any team in my division, the Eagles, obviously, then I take a shot. But, dude, you just call him a douchebag, right?
I did. I think that's pretty common. Knowledge.
It is common knowledge. I'm sure most people are coming around to that he is a douchebag and a head case just a little bit. a lot of it. But that could warrant a shot.
It probably does. It probably does. But why? I mean, I don't understand. I mean, does he think this is a good way of communicating his desire to return to a team by blasting them right after they lost?
No.
On the heels of a Miami Dolphins loss? It's pretty, pretty pathetic, if you ask me. He's a pathetic human being. I see now why the security guards at his gated complex continue to let his ex-wife or ex-girlfriend in there to bother him because, you know, he's Antonio Brown.
Hang on, let me just get this.
Oh, you gotta unscrew the Jim Beam fire is stuck on.
A lot of sugar.
All right, next up, we do have some coaching news.
You're gonna say something negative about Baltimore later on.
I am probably gonna say something negative about Baltimore, and deservedly so.
So, is it two shots or?
I'll take this one. Let's make this one like an average size shot, so I can make it through the show.
A half shot. There's a half shot for me. A half shot for you.
All right, Antonio Brown never going to play in the NFL again. That will be the sweetest justice of all. Here we go.
There you are, Ben. But I haven't said anything negative about anybody in my division.
Not yet.
Not yet.
We do have some coaching. We do. The Giants did hire a coach.
Yeah, but I'm not really worried about that.
Washington also hired a coach.
Yeah, I'm not really, really worried about them either. And so did the Dallas Cowboys.
Oh, very nice.
So, you know, I'll just say fuck the Cowboys so I can have an excuse to take a shot with you, Ben.
All right, let's do it.
Cheers.
Mmm. Very good. From right down the road in Kentucky. So there were a lot of coaching moves this week, Franny. Jason Garrett is officially out in Dallas, and Mike McCarthy is officially in. The Dallas Cowboys intensely focused their search of coaches by having a sleepover at Jerry Jones's compound this week, and they announced in a ridiculously ostentatious press conference this week that Mike McCarthy, who hired a PR firm that is second to none during this last year, sat down with coaches, ex-coaches, and ex-coordinators, looked at just about every minute of film from the Cowboys last season, as well as every minute of film, allegedly, from most of every other team this season. He vowed to remake himself in the image of an analytics guru. He plans to hire 15 or 16 analytics people, but Mike McCarthy is in Dallas. Mm-hmm, Franny, mm-hmm. What do you think about that?
We'll see what happens. I mean, it's not really something that strikes fear in the fan in Eagles fans' hearts. I mean, it's no big deal. I mean, he had success in Green Bay, but he's sort of an old school coach, you know. And I mean, he had success, but was it him or was it Aaron Rodgers? We saw what happened this year. You know, without McCarthy, they go 13-3. You know, they're number two in the NFC. The last couple of years, McCarthy didn't have any sort of success. I mean, and when Aaron Rodgers was out of the game, I mean, the team was terrible.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, they were really, really bad. I mean, you saw what happened this year with Tomlin and the issues that he had with injuries, but he still held the team together. I mean, they were 8-8 to finish the season. You know, it wasn't stellar, but they still had a chance to make the playoffs. You saw what Sean Payton did this year in the absence of Drew Brees. I mean, they still won 5 games. But McCarthy, when Aaron Rodgers was, you know, injured, they were terrible. I mean, really bad. I mean, they were a 4-win team.
Yeah, and he admitted that he had, you know, lost creativity and sort of lost the zeal for coaching there at the end of his career with the Green Bay Packers. But, I mean, the press conference essentially confirmed for me that Jerry Jones is still not interested in finding someone. As Troy Aikman said, until Jerry Jones is willing to hire a coach that every single player on the team's team knows that they answer to instead of Jerry Jones, they will not be successful. And with the ass-kissing that went on in that press conference, did you watch it? It was pretty ridiculous.
I saw bits and pieces. It wasn't as bad as that new guy in New York, but that was pretty bad, though.
That was pretty bad. That's true. But, Mike, I mean, it just reinforced what I've always thought about Mike McCarthy. He's just not that smart. He's just not. I mean, he was smart enough to hire. I mean, team in the offseason.
I have more faith
to get a job.
I have more faith in McCarthy.
Berating people at a high school basketball
game. You've been hating McCarthy.
That's who you are, man.
You've been hating on McCarthy for a long
time.
That's because
he's dumb as a bag of stumps.
Yeah, and it seems like it. I mean, it seems like it.
I just don't think he's that bright. I don't think he understands analytics. And I mean, he's going to hire 15 people to do a job that probably 5 people can could do. Analytics is nothing more than data and probabilities based on the players that you have and your history on the field. It's not really a complex thing. Analytics doesn't need 15 people to make, you know, make decisions about whether to go for it on fourth down.
You need a good spreadsheet guy.
Yeah, you need a good spreadsheet guy that puts in data and throw out the next gen stats crap that you see on TV, because that's just a league probability and not a team probability.
6% chance of catching this ball with his toes within, you know, 2 feet of the boundary or whatever.
And that's across the league. It doesn't have anything to do with the particular receiver and the quarterback combo or the defense that they're playing or the style of defense that they're playing. Analytics is far more complex than the garbage that you see from Booger McFarland on Monday Night Football. I've never been a big fan of McCarthy. I mean, I think that him and Rodgers butted heads, and I think Rodgers can continue to butt heads with whatever coach is there. I just don't think.
Mm-hmm. And the Cowboys are going to have some decisions to make in this offseason too, with Dak Prescott and with Amari Cooper and you know, a few other players there. So I mean, it might not be the exact same team that they have on the field right now. So, you know, we'll see what they do going forward, but it's not really something that I'm worried about, with the Eagles being in the NFC East and them hiring a new coach and basically everybody in the NFC East hiring a new coach. Not really something
I'd be excited if I were you.
About. I think he's a decent coach. I don't feel the same way about McCarthy as you do. I think he's decent. But I don't think he's going to find any sort of success in Dallas. I mean, they're still going to continue to be a mediocre team over there. 7-9, 8-8. You know, if they get lucky, 9-7. You know, I just don't think they're going to be much better than what they already have. And a lot of Cowboy fans out there, you know, that just wanted Jason Garrett gone. You basically fired Jason Garrett and you got an old school coach in there that's pretty much going to do similar things.
Yeah, I mean, I think he's a good... I mean, obviously, he has experience making quarterbacks better. I mean, he worked with Steve Young. He worked with Brett Favre. He worked with Aaron Rodgers.
Yeah, but those quarterbacks were already good.
They were, but he made them all better. I mean, in fairness, he did make them all better. And I think as a quarterbacks coach, as an offensive special assistant, I think he would do very, very well in that role. But as a head coach...
And I think Dak Prescott is good enough, but he's not on the same level as those guys, though. Not even close.
No. Definitely not. Next up, Wade Phillips was fired in L.A. as defensive coordinator. What do you think about that? I mean, he has been widely regarded as being a defensive guru, a defensive genius for many, many years.
I didn't understand.
And just because they had one bad year on defense, they threw Wade Phillips out with the trash.
Yeah, I mean, they weren't terrible. I mean, they weren't great. I think they were middle of the road somewhere.
Yeah.
So, I mean, like you said, it was just one bad year. I think that's a bad move by the Rams. I'm sure there's a lot of teams that are going to line up to pick him up as their defensive coordinator.
Yeah, I mean, I thought it was strange. I mean, they were, you know, 9th against the pass, 8th against the run. So mm-hmm. It wasn't as if they were terrible this year, but, you know.
It was more the offense that let them down.
Someone had to be the fall guy there. Mm-hmm. But here, another hire in your division. The New York Giants have hired ex-Patriot special teams coordinator and wide receiver coach Joe Judge to be their next head coach. And notwithstanding Bill Belichick's refusal to allow Josh McDaniels to interview earlier than he had scheduled with the Browns, notwithstanding the fact that they all had nothing to do because they had lost their game, Bill Belichick went out of his way to call the Giants and recommend Joe Judge for the position, telling New York that Judge is qualified to be a head coach, according to the NFL Network's Ian Rappaport, which means someone from the Patriots called and said that's what he said. The Giants, from what I understand, got a phone call from Bill Belichick basically selling them on Judge and saying that he was someone who is, in fact, qualified to be a head coach. Rappaport said on Tuesday he had not one job but two jobs on Bill Belichick's staff, and he was the special teams coordinator, one of the most respected positions on Belichick's staff, and he was the wide receiver coach. What do you think about Joe Judge? I love this hire. Personally, I love this hire.
Why?
You know, I'm a big fan, especially of special teams coordinators. Bill Belichick was a special teams coordinator. John Harbaugh was a special teams coordinator. There are a lot.
But they also had more experience. I mean, Bill Belichick, he was a special teams coordinator, but then wasn't he the offensive coordinator?
In Cleveland.
I mean, he was with the Browns. And then
defensive.
And then he was hired by the Jets for a second.
Literally then, for like 2 hours.
Yeah, for about 2 hours, and then he went off to New England. So even he had a higher position than Joe Judge did. And I'm not saying Joe Judge is going to be a bad coach, but just judging by his press conference.
Judging by Joe Judge.
I would not want that guy to be
well,
my...
What was your issue with the press conference?
If I'm
I want to hear... What was your issue with the press conference?
He just... It seemed so hyped up. It seemed so scripted. You know, it seems like somebody that's going into an interview. Like, you already have the job already as it is. And, you know, just be yourself. You know, I mean, he seemed like a robot up there. It seemed like everything he was about to say was just written down, and he was just going to read whatever he wrote. And it was like somebody going into an interview that are practicing the questions that they're going to ask you in the interview, and you're just going to basically read those off in your mind. I mean, that's basically what it was. It was just so robotic.
So he was organized.
It was. I wouldn't even call it organized. It was almost freakish. I don't know. It was weird.
But it wasn't as bad as Adam Gase. At least it wasn't as bad as Adam Gase.
I don't remember that one.
Oh, yeah, with his eyes sort of darting all over the place and not responding to any of the questions. I don't disagree. The press conference was weird. But I love special teams coordinators. I mean, they have to know every single person on that roster as well as all of the guys on the practice squad because they are moving interchangeable parts out around.
You don't have any sound bites, right, from that?
Oh, no, not for the press conference.
Oh, man.
I should. I can get some on our break. I'll get some Joe Judge sound effects. But, yeah, I mean, I'm
the coach of the New York
The New York football
Giants. I mean, it's not the San Francisco Giants. Of course it's the New York Giants, man.
Well, there was another team there called the Giants.
Before he was even born, before any of these players or coaches were even born.
That's true. I mean, he's very proud to be. I mean, there was a lot of ass-kissing going on. I mean, Mike McCarthy had to see Jerry Jones in his bathrobe. Joe Judge had to go
it was cute.
And pretend that the Giants are a storied, historic franchise. Mm-hmm. And that's what they both did, I think.
But still, though, I mean, I like to see the human element. I don't want to see something scripted with some dude that just goes up there and just reads off a sheet of paper.
Well, then you got to talk to Mike Tomlin or Doug Peterson.
Yeah, but even Mike Tomlin always goes up in a press conference, and that's who he is, though. I don't think that's who Joe Judge is. I like how Tomlin goes up there, and he, you know, sometimes he doesn't, you know, answer questions the way the media would like him to, you know, same way Belichick, but that's just the way Belichick is. But Joe Judge, it was like he was trying to be somebody else.
I like to see these guys get a chance.
If you're a player on the Giants, do you want to hear a guy say that type of job? We're gonna give 130% or what? I mean, it was so ridiculous, like the shit that was coming out of his mouth. We didn't talk about this at all.
Yeah, no.
But I mean, before the podcast, but now, I mean, it was almost a comedy. I was laughing at some of the stuff he was saying. It was just ridiculous.
All right. Well, it's definitely not like Belichick. Although Belichick did say that he would have routine and regular meetings with Joe Judge every single week. So I mean, I think that was a good hire. If John Mara can't destroy this somehow, some way, and Dave Gettleman can't destroy this somehow,
I think Mara's.
I think they have a chance.
I think John Mara's. He's not a bad owner.
Yeah, and I don't think Dave Gettleman is as bad as folks make him out to be either. And I think that there is something to him poking fun at everyone else who is able to sell owners on their knowledge of analytics because the owners have no idea what analytics are.
Yeah.
And I think Dave Gettleman does understand what analytics is, but he's not going to get out there and just pretend to know what he's talking about like Mike McCarthy is. he's going to you know, give it the amount of weight that it is due, which is some but not all.
Yeah. I you know, the Giants were smart in firing Shurmur. I just don't know hiring Judge was, you know, I just don't think it was a good hire.
We'll see. We'll see. Agree to disagree on this one. I like it when we don't agree. Next up, the richest owner in the NFL, David Tepper down in beautiful Carolina, hired Baylor coach Matt Rhule to a seven-year, $60 million deal.
That's a lot of money for him.
Worth up to $70 million with incentives, and paid off his contract at Baylor an additional $6 million. The money really isn't as important because this guy has got more money than any other owner. But Tepper said, I think Matt Rhule can come in here and build an organization for the next 30 or 40 years. Tepper told the team's website hours after agreeing to terms with Rhule. He can build it. The sizable offer reflected not only Rhule's value as one of the hottest college candidates in recent memory, but Tepper's vision for and deep investment in the coach and the Panthers franchise. A former minority owner of the Pittsburgh Steelers, Tepper invoked the legacy of one particular Steelers skipper as a standard by which to judge Rhule, Chuck Knoll, who built the culture that still stands in Pittsburgh today. He built a program, Tepper said. He built a program that has lasted through three coaches, Tepper said, of the four-time Super Bowl champ. That's what I hope Matt Rhule can do for us here. He is a program builder. He dresses like, well, there was a curse in there. He dresses like shit and sweats all over himself. He dresses like me, so I have to love the guy, Tepper said with a laugh. I was a short order cook. He was a short order cook. Nobody gave him anything. Nobody gave me anything. What do you think about this hire? I mean, this is an interesting hire. He was supposed to fly out to New York and interview or even Cleveland.
But I think he saw the amount that was being given to him in the deal, and he's like, you know what? I'll take it. Yeah, exactly.
That's John Gruden money right there.
John Gruden actually has a little bit more, but yeah, actually, no, it's $10 million, just about $10 million a year. They hired, what, Gruden for $100 million? So it's an interesting hire. I mean, he did churn Baylor around completely. In college football, nobody ever really paid attention to Baylor. But, I mean, the last couple of years, in 3 years or so, he's turned them around, and they lost, what, two games this year?
Yeah, lost the Big 12 championship
to
Oklahoma.
Well, we'll see what happens. I mean, I'm not sure. I haven't paid too much attention to Rhule and what he has accomplished. But
turned Temple around as well.
I think it was just a good move for them to have a fresh start, move on from Ron Rivera, and try something new because there's so many moving parts in Carolina right now, which is similar to, you know, the college game. You have all these players, new players coming in every single year. So they obviously need a new quarterback, new receivers. Their defense kind of struggled. So, I mean, if someone's going to, you know, turn around an organization, he might be the right guy to do it because he's used to just doing that sort of thing.
Yeah, and I think it's a great hire. I mean, it's easy to say that folks come over from college don't perform well. Pete Carroll performed well. Yeah. Nick Saban was in a bad situation in Miami, and Steve Spurrier was in a terrible situation in Washington as well. So it's not like these guys that come over from college are hired into particularly great situations. But as you mentioned, Harbaugh didn't do particularly well in San Francisco. But, you know, I mean, there's no reason to say that these guys won't do well when they come over. And I think it's a good hire. I mean, I think Tepper's a smart guy.
Wait, Harbaugh didn't do good in San Francisco.
Well, I mean, he did okay.
He went to the Super Bowl, man.
Was he the coach when they went to?
Yeah, against the Ravens. Against the Ravens.
When the Ravens beat him?
Yeah.
I didn't remember that.
It was, what's his name?
I don't know why you would be complaining.
I mean, he turned that organization around within a year of firing their old coach. I can't remember his name now, but
Singletary
was the coach. I think they were 8-8 the year before. The next year,
Singletary was terrible. Great guy, terrible coach.
Yeah, the next year, I mean, he was a great guy. But, the next year, you bring Harbaugh in. Harbaugh goes to the NFC Championship. The following year, the Super Bowl. So he found some success over there.
Fair enough. I had forgotten that he was the coach. That was such an unmemorable Super Bowl between a pretty strange, it was sort of one-off San Francisco team and in the Ravens.
Yeah.
That Joe Flacco somehow managed to creep his way into the Super Bowl that year and win a Super Bowl, no less.
He won it.
Yeah, that was Kaepernick against Flacco.
Got himself a huge contract.
That's almost as bad as, who was it? It was Rex Grossman against, who did they play that year?
They played the Colts.
Oh, yeah. That was,
I mean, you knew the Colts were going to win that year. When Sexy Rexy is your quarterback, you know.
Manning got lucky there. He definitely got a good opponent. Next up, Cleveland interviewed everybody and their mother. So they interviewed Josh McDaniels. He was the last of eight candidates that were interviewed this week. And the only one, former Packers coach Mike McCarthy, had been officially eliminated because he took the Cowboys job this past Monday. The others that were interviewed were Ravens offensive coordinator Greg Roman, Chiefs offensive coordinator Eric Bieniemy, Vikings offensive coordinator Kevin Stefanski, Bills offensive coordinator Brian Daboll, 49ers defensive coordinator Robert Saleh, and Eagles defensive coordinator Jim Schwartz. They also reached out to two other people today. Defensive coordinator, I believe, from the Detroit Lions, as well as someone else. But Cleveland is interviewing everyone and anyone.
And nobody wants the job.
Well, it looks like there was an announcement on Friday that they hope to lock up Josh McDaniels on Friday.
That's
and that didn't happen.
That's interesting.
And now they said they hope to have a decision over the weekend. So I wonder if that potentially means that Josh McDaniels is not enamored with the job.
I really don't think anybody is.
Well, I mean, it's hard to work for Jimmy Haslam in that, organization.
Josh McDaniels didn't take the Colts job last year. It was the year before. And they were in a better situation with Luck at the time. But now you got Baker Mayfield and a bunch of these guys, these prima donnas out there. I don't think anybody really wants to deal with that team.
I mean, it's a tough one. I mean, I hate to see someone go there into this coach's graveyard. But I don't see Josh McDaniels taking that job. It kind of probably depends on what happens in New England with their quarterback situation. But I just don't see – he had an uneventful 2 years in Denver before returning to the Patriots. But it's a tough one.
Mm-hmm.
That's a tough job for anyone to take. And I think that's why they're interviewing so many candidates. And I would suspect they have already made offers and have potentially been turned down.
Mm-hmm.
So, Franny, next up. I think that's about it for the coaches, hires, and fires. We'll talk about some of the more coordinators next week. But I did have a question for you. The next NFL news. So after the Saints' terrible, terrible loss to the Minnesota Vikings last weekend, do you think it's time to change the overtime rules in the postseason to guarantee that both teams have a chance to possess the ball?
I don't think so. I'm happy with the overtime rules the way they are right now.
Really?
I don't have an issue with it. I mean, you know, people say it's a 50-50, it's a coin toss, but you know, the defense still has to go out there and perform. And if that other team, you know, potentially makes or misses a field goal, you have your chance to go down the field, and you have the added value of maybe going for it on fourth down in situations that you might not actually go for it. So I mean, you kind of turn around the other way. So I mean, I don't mind the rules the way they are right now. What about you?
Well, I tend to agree with your former coach, Andy Reid. The Chiefs made a proposal last year that was narrowly defeated on the rules committee, and it was rather than ending the game, if a touchdown is scored on the first drive of overtime, both teams would get one possession. If the game remained tied after the initial possession, then sudden death would take effect. So, in other words, the Saints would have had a chance in that game to go down the field, score a touchdown. If they did not score a touchdown, the game would end. I mean, it's just Saints are always going to whine about the end of the game regardless. That's just how the Saints are. They're going to whine about the pass interference that wasn't.
Yeah.
They're going to whine and whine and whine and whine. That's just what Saints fans do because they can't get over the fact that their coach chokes in the worst possible situations in the postseason year after year.
Last year, they had an argument. This year, there's no argument. I didn't think it was PI. I think both players were both going at it. I mean, the tight end pushed off only because they were battling, you know, at the beginning of that route. So I mean, it was kind of back and forth. So I mean, it could have been called PI on either way, really, if you look at it. But hey, I don't see that as being a PI. The game ended. And I don't have a problem with overtime rules.
If it was the Eagles,
maybe I would.
Yeah, exactly. Only Saints fans could complain about a play, the conduct of which was legal from the advent of the automobile all the way through the mid-90s. That play would have been legal. So because it has been ruled illegal somewhat for the last, 20 years, the Saints view it as the greatest affront to their franchise ever since the last one last year. Get over it. The Saints are just not a very good postseason
team.
Just live with it. They didn't perform well. Own it. Just, Pete Sampras didn't play well on clay. That's the way it goes. All right, next up we have
I don't remember.
Was it Sampras that didn't? One of those guys did not play well on the clay court.
Federer.
Federer didn't play well on clay.
Yeah.
Had a really hard time winning the French Open, right?
I think he might have won it once, maybe.
But, that's the way it goes. You win Wimbledon, all the time. You win Agassi played well at the U.S. Open. You're not going to play well all the time. Next up, we have a topic that is so near and dear to Frane's heart. Let's talk about the hit on Carson Wentz that took him
out of the
game. Teammates of Philadelphia Eagles quarterback Carson Wentz took issues with the hit by Seattle Seahawks defensive end Jadeveon Clowney that knocked Wentz out of the game in last Sunday's wildcard game in the first quarter. Tim McManus of ESPN reported left tackle Jason Peters confronted Clowney on the field after seeing a replay of the hit in which Clowney made contact with Wentz's helmet and upper back as they slammed into the turf. Wentz left with a head injury a short time later and did not return, playing only 8 snaps in Philadelphia's 17-9 loss to Seattle. I checked Clowney about it, Peter said. He was mouthing. I was mouthing back at him. I just told him, man, that's a dirty play. And he's like, my bad, and just kept on playing. I just kept reminding him, man, stay off my quarterback. I'm a left tackle. I've got his back. I'm the blind side. And I take it personal when somebody is taking a late hit or trying to rough up the quarterback. Clowney said he was not attempting to injure Wentz. It was a bang-bang play, he said. I don't intend to hurt anybody in this league. Just let me put that out there. I've been down the injury road. It's not fun. My intention was not to hurt him. I was just playing fast. What say you, Franny?
You know, talking about whining with the Saints, I don't want to sound like I'm whining right now. I mean, it was, I'm not saying it was intentional, what he did, but for a 6'7" linebacker to dive helmet first into a quarterback that's diving to the ground, I mean, it raises some questions. You know, I don't think he was trying to take him out of the game, but I also don't think that he was, you know, not trying to
not hit him.
Yeah, I mean, he knew what he was doing. You know, to try to, you know, sort of rough him up. But I mean, it in slow motion, it looks dirty. When I watched it in live action, you know, I was wondering why there was no flag, similar to the hit that Lamar Jackson took when he dove forward. And I think a linebacker sort of dove on his head. So it's interesting that there was no flag thrown, whereas later in the game, you see Russell Wilson, you know, throw the ball, and then maybe a couple of steps later, he gets hit by, I can't remember which player it was, and there's roughing the passer on that play. You know, they're calling Wentz a runner in this play because the play sort of broke down, but he was jumping. He wasn't really trying to gain any more yardage. And then you have Jadeveon Clowney coming into the play that was essentially over head first into Wentz. So, I mean, there are some questions there as to whether or not it was intentional or unintentional. It's really hard to say because I've seen Jadeveon Clowney, make some other dirty hits. I mean,
yeah,
against
the hit
Foles,
on Foles last year.
Last year, he almost tore off his head on a face mask penalty that was not called. And then later in that game, he lowers his head into the sternum of Foles and knocks him out of the game for one play.
He hit him. So he nailed him on that play.
He really nailed him. You know, it's not something I want to whine about. I'm not saying the Eagles would have won the game with Wentz as the quarterback. But, you know, I mean, the NFL should really look at if they're really focusing on player safety, you know, why let this play go? You know, why not follow up and maybe fine him? Or
yeah, there hasn't been any fine from the NFL.
And they said they won't fine him, too. So I don't understand.
I don't think it was intentional. I think it was unfortunate. I think it's how he plays. I think given any other similar situation, he probably would have done exactly the same thing.
Yeah, but he has to be held accountable.
I don't
eventually.
Disagree with that.
He has to be held accountable.
I don't think he was trying to hurt him. I just think that's how he plays. Yeah. And that's how he was taught to play, and he hasn't changed.
Yeah.
I mean, the hit on Foles was more egregious because it didn't have to happen. He obviously took the crown of his helmet and nailed him right in the chest.
Yeah, I mean,
on that
you could
play.
See him lower his
yeah,
head.
I mean, that
when
was
he's about
very, there. Very intentional. This was.
But even in this one, when he's diving, while he's diving, he
and it
does
didn't even cause that,
tip,
and it didn't even really cause that
his
much
head down towards Wentz.
And that wasn't even necessarily what caused the injury. It was just.
Well, I mean, he hit the back of Wentz's helmet, which you know forced Wentz's head into the turf, and I'm sure that caused more damage than the initial hit. So it's unfortunate. I'm surprised that he was not fined, you know, for that particular play.
I agree,
especially with the outcry since that play.
Yeah, there definitely should have been a flag on the play during the game.
Mm-hmm.
A more interesting question, at least for you, is Carson Wentz ever going to manage to learn to keep himself
protected?
He
needs
protected.
To be smart. He definitely needs to be smart. But even in this play, he was already going down.
He was. Yeah,
he was going down.
But he was standing up, moving forward again, instead of sliding backwards into the ground like a normal quarterback.
He was being tackled from behind already, and the play seemed like it was over, and then Jadeveon Clowney finishes it, basically.
That's fair, but he's got to figure out a way to keep himself safe.
Yeah,
somehow,
he definitely does. He definitely does. He needs to be smarter when he's running with the football, especially with somebody his size.
And I think the Eagles had a chance to win that game if he stayed healthy. For the rest of the, I mean, who knows? Well, if you guys score 28 points, it just means the Seahawks are going to score 30.
Yeah. I mean,
if you score 17, you're going to score 20.
What's going to happen. I mean, it happened really early in the game, but it was just unfortunate. I expected the Eagles to lose that game just because of all of the other injuries that they had. But it would have just nice. It would have been nice to see, the team play on, sort of level footing with the Seahawks. I mean, with all the injuries that they've had, at least have Wentz as your starting quarterback and not some 40-year-old that hasn't thrown a football since October.
It sucked. I mean, poor Sonya was, walking around the house. I don't want to win this way. You know, she felt terrible.
Sonya doesn't feel terrible.
She felt terrible about it. She did. Yeah. I mean, she didn't want to win a game on a dirty play like that. But Clowney did have something to say later in the week via the Philadelphia Inquirer. Clowney said, you know that? Right. They hated me coming out of the tunnel. They hated me going in the tunnel. I don't know why. I'm just like trying to be friends. I'm a friendly guy. That was what he said this week, because Clowney had also injured Eagles quarterback Nick Foles last year. I tried to tell them boys on my team, I said, this team hates me. Their fans hate me for some reason. They think I tried to kill Nick Foles.
He did. Nick Foles survived, though.
Yeah, and he's a pretty frail dude. I mean, Nick Foles. So you can try to kill him, you might be successful. Clowney, I don't think he understands. I mean, his quotes don't evidence a lot of understanding of what he did on either of those two plays.
Yeah.
And the NFL has been pretty clear about this the last few years. To their credit, you should be able to see what you're tackling. I mean, this is what they teach now. And and neither one of those plays could Clowney, did he have any idea where he was going or what his head or where his eyes were, they weren't facing what he was tackling. But Mike Pereira, friend of yours, at least this week, who was a referee for a long time in the NFL and now works for CBS, NBC, I think. He said, the main one to me is that you have a hit on a defenseless player, Pereira said on Tuesday. Wentz's head is in the ground. He actually hits the ground about the same time as the contact occurs. I think it was a cheap shot, and the reason that I base it with that is on a regular speed video, not slow motion. Slow motion distorts everything. Listen, I don't think Clowney tried to hurt anybody, but I do think he tries to punish him, and it was my opinion of the play to needlessly punish him. What do you think?
I agree with Mike.
See? you're not alone. I mean, there's no one really came is coming out and defending the PI call or the PI call that wasn't against the Minnesota Vikings the way that they're defending the Philadelphia Eagles against this call with Jadeveon Clowney. So I'm sorry that the season had to end.
It ended. It ended, Ben.
To end this way.
But I expected it to end. I was just happy that the Eagles made it to the playoffs, and the Cowboys did not.
Fair enough.
So now both of our teams are out.
Yes.
We're just going to have to root for the Seahawks.
We have no choice.
I'm giving Sonya a lot of shit.
Well, you definitely were giving her a lot of shit last week.
Yeah, that's why I have the little Aaron Rodgers bobblehead on the table right now as we speak. Am I really rooting for the Packers? No, not really. I'm still going to root for the Seahawks. I hope Sonya's team does well. I hope they do make it to the NFC Championship game, and it would be fun to watch the Niners and the Seahawks one more time because the last two games have been amazing.
Ugh, not after the way the Niners played today.
Yeah, it's today. Any given Sunday.
Next up, we have our feel-good story of the week. What do you think? Is that
I think that's perfect. That, okay? That is perfect, Ben. That is a perfect lead-in.
Franny has been asking me for weeks now to get a lead in to our feel good story of the week.
That is perfect.
So this week we have Tyler Ott, who now, I believe, plays for the Seattle Seahawks from the Second Step. The Second Step is a Newton, Massachusetts-based domestic violence organization, and it's thrilled to announce a partnership with Ashley and Tyler Ott for the NFL's My Cause, My Cleats campaign. A graduate of Harvard University, Tyler started his NFL career as a member of the New England Patriots. Tyler is currently entering his third season as the long snapper for the Seattle Seahawks. He resides in Milton, Massachusetts, with his wife, Ashley, who is a longtime supporter and board member of The Second Step. The Ott's interest in The Second Step is fueled by disturbing domestic violence trends in the United States. It is a wonderful example of a power couple working to fight against domestic violence, and in doing so, raise awareness of the work that the Second Step is doing for domestic violence survivors and their family, said Executive Director of Second Step, Julie Lima. On average, nearly 20 people per minute are physically abused by an intimate partner in the United States, many by Antonio Brown. During 1 year, this equates to more than 10 million women and men. Ashley and Tyler's goal is to raise awareness of domestic violence and the great work that the Second Step Foundation is doing, housing and support to families impacted by domestic violence, needing to make a fresh start. The OTS have commissioned local artist Julian Strom Brill to design Tyler's cleats that he will wear for week 14, of the NFL season. And following the game, the NFL hosted an online auction, and 100% of the proceeds raised by Tyler's cleats were donated to the Second Step. Fans may bid or did bid on game-issued player cleats on the website. The Second Step is a community of survivors, advocates, and volunteers who foster safety, stability, and well-being of those who have experienced domestic violence. They provide comprehensive services including safety, planning, legal advocacy, counseling, peer support, transitional housing, and other essential services to adults, youth, and children in the greater Boston and Metro West area. For more information, you can go to the secondstep.org. Frane, what say you about Tyler Ott supporting... Not supporting domestic violence, but supporting support for those who have been subjected or victims of domestic violence throughout the Boston metropolitan area. I think this is a really,
It's great. I love when NFL players go out there and you know, spend some of their hard-earned money on these sorts of causes.
I agree. And we're going to try to continue to do this. You know, some will be more interesting than others.
And I think your lead-in should also be... your exit music, too. So that was the feel-good music intro, and this is the outro. Yeah, it's great.
That's it for the NFL news.
It was actually more than I expected.
It was more than I expected.
We did talk at length about the coaching hires.
Yeah, well, there were a lot of coaching hires.
Well, at least in the NFC East there were, The NFC East was terrible. So you expect a bunch.
All right, Franny, what's next up on the big board?
Next up on the big board, Ben, is a little bit of housekeeping.
Yes. Thank you all so very much for listening to our show. You can go to our website, thirstinggold.buzzsprout.com. There you can subscribe or listen to the show. You could check out our show notes, get links to the beverages.
Well, you're excited.
The beverages that we review, the beers, the scotches, the ales, all of the beverages that we review. You can also subscribe or listen on any of the podcatchers through our website as well. You can leave us an email. The email address is there. You can get links to all of the topics or most of the topics that we cover on the show to get more information about those. You can also get our Twitter and Instagram. Franny's amazing. Instagram is available there.
Not compared to your Twitter, Ben.
And you can check out all his amazing photography as well. Once again, thirstinggold.buzzsprout.com. Check us out there. Franny, what's next up on the big board?
Next up on the big board, Ben, is our wild card recap.
All right, hold tight, everybody. We'll be right back with our wild card recap.
All right, Ben, we are back with the wild card recap. And last weekend, we did already recap the Bills and the Texans and the Titans and the Patriots. The Texans winning, the Titans surprisingly winning. We'll get to the other surprising victory a little bit in just a little bit. But what we didn't talk about was the Vikings and the Saints. That was a shocker.
It was a shocking outcome in that game. What do you think about that game, Franny?
I did not expect it. I mean, I chose the Vikings to win that game.
I thought
you were crazy, but then you've been choosing the Jets all year. But
in fairness,
the Vikings, I mean, they came out to play. They came out with a little more ferocity. I mean, they were playing with some passion in that game, and Kirk motherfucking Cousins.
Oh my God, he
pulled
played
it off. I mean, it went to overtime. You know, there was a little bit of an issue at the end of the game.
Allegedly.
I didn't think it was much of a PI, but I mean, what do you think about the game in general, Ben?
I mean, I think that they, you know, the Vikings came to play. Their defensive front had Breeze under pressure all game long. The only bright spot they really had from the quarterback position was from Taysom Hill when he was in there at quarterback and also running the ball. But they were able to bottle up Drew Brees and made his life miserable all game long. They were able to get Michael Thomas under control somewhat as well. They were able to run the ball really well. The Vikings ran the ball. I mean, Dalvin Cook alone, 28 carries for 94 yards and two touchdowns in the game. Kirk Cousins, 19-31 for 242 yards and one huge touchdown to Rudolph in that game. But I mean, I think they
and a huge toss at the end of the game in overtime to Thielen to what, the 2 yard line. I mean, he played.
I was shocked at how well their defense, especially the secondary defense, played against Brees. I expected the defensive front for the Vikings to play well and bottle up the running game, but I did not expect, you know, with what's his name? Well, Xavier Rhodes and the gentleman that could not play for Philadelphia, they sent him back to Minnesota.
Sendejo.
I mean, to have those two guys out there and to be able to bottle up Brees, that was pretty impressive.
No, it was impressive the way they did come out. I just don't know what to say about the Saints, though. I mean, they were on a roll coming into this game. I mean, they were throwing up.
They were as good as anybody in the NFL.
Yeah, I mean, 40 points a game. I mean, the last few games of the season, I mean, Brees was on fire. But, I mean, the Vikings defense was very impressive putting pressure on Brees. And, you know, at the end of the game, I mean, you know, the Vikings or the Saints can, you know, their fans can blame the referees for not calling that, you know, supposed PI. I don't think it was a PI. They can blame them all they want, but they
definitely
can,
not.
The only thing they have, I mean, the only people they have to blame are the Saints players.
And Sean Payton.
And Sean Payton.
I mean, he botched the time management at the end of the first half. I mean, rushing down there to get a playoff before the two-minute warning when they didn't have any reason to do so. They had timeouts, and they rushed down there to get a playoff, and what do you know? Interception.
Yeah.
You know, and at the end of the second half as well, they went into overtime with a timeout in their pocket. They could have gotten the ball down closer and actually potentially scored a touchdown at the end of regulation. But instead, Sean Payton wanted to have that timeout in his back pocket, left him with nothing but a field goal at the end of the game that they were lucky to get at the end of that game. I mean, I think Sean Payton and Drew Brees, I mean, they just have the yips when it comes to when it comes to playoff football. I mean, look at the team. Look at what they did during the regular season. I mean, they were amazing all regular season. Michael Thomas, Taysom Hill, Kamara. I mean, they played so well. I mean, they were
three. They didn't take advantage of Kamara. I think Kamara could be, you know, one of the elite running backs in the league. And
carries for 21 yards.
Yeah, yeah. I mean,
Taysom Hill had 4 carries.
Yeah,
Murray had 5. How does Latavius Murray have 5 carries and Alvin Kamara has 7 carries?
It doesn't make any sense to me. I mean, you know, Kamara is the better running back, the more explosive running back. He's better out of the backfield catching the football. So, I mean, you have to get him involved in the game. I mean, you know, they run these trick plays with Hill. I mean, what do you want? I mean, do you want him to be a quarterback? Do you want him to be a running back? Do you want him to be a receiver? I mean, he was the one bright spot on the team, but, you know, figure out a role for him.
I think we talked about it earlier. I mean, I think you insulted me. I said, not insult, that's too strong, but I said they should be using Taysom Hill more, and I think you said they should be using him less.
Oh, fuck off.
Fuck off.
Fuck off.
Back to the paddy.
Buddingtons.
Back to the paddy with you. I think they should use, I mean, at some point they probably should have just threw him in there as the quarterback.
Yeah, seriously.
Brees looked awful in the game.
He did not look good in this game. He looked his age in this game.
26 of 33 for 208 yards and count it, one touchdown and count it, one huge interception at the end of the first half. I honestly don't know.
I mean, it seems like they were trying to be too
what
smart
to make of it
with their play calling with Hill and going for these trick plays.
They're always trying to be cute. Sean Payton's trying to be cute.
You have Michael Thomas, the best receiver. You have Kamara, who could potentially be one of the top two or three running backs in the league, and you're running Taysom Hill. I mean, not that he performed terribly. I mean, he was great in this game, but you know, just stick to your game plan. I mean, it seems like Taysom Hill was just sort of, I don't know, it was like a. They figured they couldn't win this game, you know, outright. So they just tried these trick plays. That's what it seemed like.
You saw the way that Minnesota played today, and we'll talk about that game. But I mean, that's the Minnesota team that the Saints played as well.
Yeah,
and then the Saints couldn't get past Minnesota. Had to barely eke it through there just to get it to overtime with the field goal. But Adam Thielen again with 129 yards. I just don't have an explanation for it. I mean, the Saints didn't score any points in the second half until Breeze threw a 20-yard touchdown to Taysom Hill with 10:31 remaining in the fourth quarter. They didn't score a single point.
Running back, wide receiver.
Yeah, they didn't score a single point up there until 10 minutes to go in the fourth quarter.
It just came out. It was flat. It was a flat performance by the Saints. I mean, you're playing at home in front of your crowd. I mean, you got the noise and everything over there. They did not take advantage of the situation.
I mean, what do you think is the explanation for the Saints' inability to move through the playoffs as well as they play during the regular season? The weapons that they have, and their defense was pretty good too.
Their defense has been pretty good this year. I just think they took the Vikings lightly. I think they bought into what the media was saying. And they figured it would be an easy win. The Vikings would just roll over and lose. But
I mean, they were 13th against the pass, 5th against the run. Mm-hmm. The Saints all year long.
Yeah,
and even better in the second half of the season.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't have an explanation. I mean, I will give Kirk Cousins a lot of credit. He played really well
when he needed to. He made some big plays. Huge throws down the field, especially that last one to Thielen.
I mean, that play was beautiful.
Yeah.
I mean, when you protect Kirk Cousins, which the Minnesota Vikings learned today that you must protect Kirk Cousins. When you protect him, he can pick a defense apart.
Yeah.
But when you don't protect him, he does not move laterally at all. I think I called him a joystick earlier today. He just moves, he's like a gear shift. He moves forward and backwards, and that is all.
Mm-hmm.
He cannot move left to right. He cannot evade pressure. But he played amazing. I mean, I don't have any explanation.
I want to say amazing. But he played well.
He played amazing in this game.
Yeah.
He made every big play they needed to make. He picked up big third downs. He understood when he had to dump the ball off, and he really was effective in the play action game, which is really their bread and butter in Minnesota.
And Cook was awesome.
And Cook was awesome. I mean, I don't know what to make of it. There's got to be some explanation for the Saints' inability to move deep into the playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they have Breeze. They have Kamara. They have a decent defense. They've got the best receiver in the league.
Man.
They've got a decent tight end. I don't understand why they can't move past the Minnesota Vikings.
Maybe it's
at home, no less.
I was going to say Sean Payton, but he's won the Super Bowl himself. I mean, he's been in these situations.
I think Breeze he's too clever by half.
Yeah, I think he was just trying too hard, and that's when you bring Taysom Hill and you start running these trick plays. There's really no reason for that because you have the weapons on offense to run the plays. Yeah, I mean, you don't need Taysom Hill to do that. If you want to be in there as a quarterback, then put him in there as a fucking quarterback. Don't put him as a wide receiver in the Wildcat formation. I mean, it's like, and every time he gets it in the Wildcat formation, he's going to run.
Yeah.
There's not every time I watch him play, he is going to run with the ball. He's not going to hand it off to Kamara or to Latavius Murray. He's always going to run it.
Yeah, and if you have someone on your team, I mean, this isn't like slash Cordell Stewart, who ended up as the quarterback of the Steelers through default. If you have someone as good as Taysom Hill on your team, I mean, the guy's almost 30 years old, by the way. I mean, he's not like he's 25 years old.
Mm-hmm.
If you have someone that talented on your team and you're in a complicated game where you are fighting for your life, why don't you use him more?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, why not just have him on the field as a wide receiver? Why not just have him on the field as a running back with Breeze in the game? If he's your second best player on offense next to Michael Thomas or Kamara, why isn't he in the game more?
Yeah.
I just think Sean Payton is too clever by half. I think he tries to outsmart people rather than just playing a good game of football, and they got bit. Breeze looked terrible.
Yeah. I mean, I can't say they got beat by a better team. They just got beat by a team that was playing with more passion and more heart. They came out. They played hard, and the Saints fell flat on their face.
Yes, and this is what Cousins had to say after the game.
Hey, that's how we've won all year, team, right? Hey, you held them to 20 points, man.
Yes, sir.
You gave us a chance at the end. I got three words for you. You like that? Yeah!
You got to give Cousins credit, man. Give him his one moment in the sun.
Yeah,
there.
Exactly.
Give him his one moment in the sun. I mean, I think he deserved it because so many people ridicule him, me included.
Mm-hmm.
So many people ridicule Kirk Cousins.
Not me.
I think he deserves a little bit.
Maybe a little bit today.
A little bit of respect for beating
the
13-3 Saints. I mean, give the guy a little bit of credit, and we have to at least play the final play of the game, because it was so awesome to see Saints fans pissed off again, blaming the referee for their inability to be competent in the playoffs.
Yeah, Rudolph up here at the top.
Troy Aikman.
Cousins throws. Pass is caught for the win.
Oh, you got to give the guy credit.
And it was a fair catch. It was fair. When I watched the play live, I did not see, you know, any obvious pass interference. It was two guys battling for the football. You know, obviously, you know, Kyle Rudolph is a much bigger player, much stronger. So when he pushes off, it's going to, you know, it's going to be a little more obvious. But, you know, it could have been PI either way, if you want to call it. But, you know, the Saints fans really should, they really don't have anything to complain about in this one or argue about a PI.
No, I don't think so. I mean, like I said, it's been legal since the Model T. So I think that they need to get over that. I mean, think about it being a receiver playing in the 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s, and most of the 90s, and having to put up with that, or a defensive back and having to put up with that in every single game you play. You know, all the quarterbacks that are on the top 100, with the exception of a couple of them, all had to play under these circumstances. You know, it was a minor push off in his fronty. Mentioned earlier, I mean, the offensive player, I can't, or the defensive player, I can't remember who that was.
Yeah, I can't remember who it was.
But that was in coverage there also.
He
was tangled up there as well.
Yeah, he was the first one to make contact. He actually grabbed Kyle Rudolph's hands and held him down for a moment. Kyle Rudolph created some space with, you know, the slight push off, and I think it was a little bit of acting on the defensive player. He kind of, you know, overreacted to the push off to try to, you know, get a penalty in that situation. But no, it was fair, and there should have been no penalty. And, you know, Saints players, they should only be mad at the players that were on the field who performed so poorly the entire game.
Yeah, and I think much like the Minnesota Vikings, the Saints have got to figure out that something has to change there. I mean, I know it sounds extraordinarily strange to talk about something having to change on a 13-3 team, but they can't get over the hump in the playoffs. So there has to be an explanation for it, because they can't be that good.
I mean, because the last
during the regular season year.
Yeah,
year
I mean, the last two seasons, they have been good enough to go to the Super Bowl. They have been good enough to win the Super Bowl.
Absolutely.
I mean,
they were good enough, and they got beat by the Seahawks when they were 7-9.
Yeah. And the caliber of the players that they have, I mean, this should not happen.
No, I agree. I mean, and it's too bad, because I know a lot of people like the Saints and like Drew Brees, but there is something in their head about the playoffs, and that's another reason why I respect Eli Manning so much.
Oh, you just didn't give a shit.
Because he just was, you know, even you know, when it came playoff time, you know, he was able to get it done, and Drew Brees can't seem to get it done.
Mm-hmm.
Find anything else about this game?
No, it was shocking. I mean, I didn't think that the Vikings had any sort of chance to win this game. I'm happy that they did. I mean, you know, I picked the Saints to win, but I was rooting for the Vikings in this one. I was rooting for Kirk motherfucking Cousins
in
this one.
Damn right.
Yeah.
And I say thank God for it after today, because I got shellacked today in terms of the betting. But I actually took the Vikings on the money line last week, and I also took them in a parlay on the money line with the Seahawks on the money line last week. So at least I have that to sort of warm my heart after getting my ass handed to me in the games today. Friday, what's the next game?
The next game, Ben.
Sorry.
These sorts of things happen. One team had to go home and one team had to go forward.
That's why I didn't want you guys to play each other.
I loved the matchup. I loved the matchup because it was the only chance that the Eagles had to go forward. It was their best opponent that they could, if they could choose an opponent out of the other five, the Seahawks would be the best ones. And unfortunately, Sonya's not on the show tonight because she is sick. She's dealing with a virus, and you know, she's drinking her NyQuil and this and that, and getting better. She's in bed right now.
Yeah, lots of different TV prescriptions.
But is Sonya's favorite team the Seahawks versus my team, the Eagles? The Eagles losing 17-9, the same
barely
score that they lost earlier in the year by 17-9.
Just barely.
But when Wentz went out
in the first quarter,
I do not understand why the Seahawks just did not blow out the Eagles. I mean, this is a problem that the Seahawks have had all year long. They just let teams hang around, and the Eagles were they were in scoring position a couple of times in that game. They just couldn't get it done. But I mean, I'm not. It's the play calling that's. It's just so perplexing. I'm not sure.
You got to run the ball regardless. You got to run.
But against
ball.
The Eagles, you
gently
throw
down the
ball.
Field.
You throw the ball against the Eagles because that's where you'll find the most success against the Eagles. That's something that the Seahawks didn't do. They gave the Eagles a chance to come back in this game. And going forward, if they continue this, they won't find much success.
Yeah, and they didn't even really run the ball that much. I mean, it had nine. Russell Wilson himself had 9 carries for 45 yards. He actually handled himself really well in terms of picking up big first downs on the, you know, with his legs. Homer carried the ball 11 times. Lynch carried the ball 6 times for 7 yards
and a touchdown.
But yeah, I mean, I don't quite understand
the play calling.
I don't either.
But this was the same thing last year.
He plays to his opponent
against
Pete
Dallas.
Plays to his opponent.
Against Dallas, the same thing last year.
And they should have won that game.
They should have easily won that game if they just thrown the ball. That's their strength. I mean, you have one of the best quarterbacks, you know, top. Three, top four quarterbacks.
Best quarterback left in the playoffs, if you ask me.
And there's some, you know, Mahomes is pretty good himself, too.
They are all good.
I mean,
they are all good.
Yeah.
But I think I would take Russell Wilson over anybody that's left in the playoffs one game.
Aaron Rodgers is pretty darn good himself.
In one game where you got where the outcome matters, whether you have more points than your opponent, I will take Russell Wilson.
Yeah. And I mean, he's accurate with the football, he has a strong arm. He throws a perfect spiral every single time. I mean, in this game, they could have just chucked it down the field to DK Metcalf every single play, and they would have beat the Eagles 35-6 or 9.
Yeah, and rookie Metcalf, you know, he had 7 receptions for 160 yards, including that huge 36-yard catch sealing the win. Set a rookie record for a playoff debut with 160 yards, and they could have done that all game. Could have done it all game long. But hats off. I want to just make sure that I don't forget to say this. Hats off to Josh McCown for his performance in this game. If you ask me, he was the MVP of this game, even in a loss.
Yeah.
18 of 24. I don't know what that percentage is, but it's pretty damn good. 174 yards, did everything he could, tore his hamstring sometime either in the fourth quarter or in the third quarter of this game, was playing with a torn hamstring throughout the fourth quarter at least. And he gave the Eagles a chance to win and come down and win that game. I mean, it was 4th and 4 at the end of the game. And had he been 5 years younger, the Eagles the Eagles would have what was this? I mean, the score at that point was they would have had to to tie the game up. But they were right there.
They were there.
And they're a beat up team. I mean, I know that the Seahawks are beat up as well. They're missing some offensive linemen. They're missing Ziggy Ansah on defense as well. But they, you know, the Eagles had a chance in the game. I just don't understand as much as exactly what Franny said. I just don't get why the Seahawks believe that there are 5 quarters in the game when there are only 4 quarters in the game. I mean, that's what happened to him, as you mentioned, with the Cowboys last year. I mean, why you don't put your foot on the gas? I mean, did you see that pass at the end of the game?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
That pass to Metcalf? I mean, who? I even texted Franny. I was like, there's no way they're throwing the ball here.
Because that's the same thing they did earlier in the year. I can't remember which team it was. Was it against Tampa Bay? But also, it was the same thing. It was third and long. I can't remember. It was third and 10. It could have been third and 11. I'm not sure exactly. But they did the exact same thing. Russell Wilson scrambled in the pocket and found a player downfield, completed the pass, and game was over. I felt that they were going to do the exact same thing in this one. And, you know, they did. It was actually looked better against the Eagles because the secondary is just trash.
Beautiful catch.
Yeah. He went up for the ball. He you know, for a rookie to do that, kudos to him.
I mean, the only quibble I would have with Doug Peterson in this game is Miles Sanders carried the ball 14 times for 69 yards. Boston Scott carried the ball 6 times. But I would have leaned on the running game a little bit more, I think, especially with Sanders. He looked really good early on in that game.
Yeah.
I probably would have leaned on Sanders a little bit more and got him more involved in the screen game as well as just carrying the ball. I think if he carried the ball 25, 28 times. You know, because the Seahawks are god-awful against the run.
They are.
They're terrible against the run. In this game, they were actually pretty good. But they're typically pretty bad against the run. And I think if you continue to pound it, I think you might have found a little bit more success against that front. But once again, Marshawn Lynch came to play.
Goes in motion. Russell play fake. Now he's going to throw down the middle. Got a man. Metcalf makes the catch diving. He is in for a touchdown. Seahawks. What a
wrong highlight.
By the rookie.
But this was that huge touchdown to DK Metcalf where he caught the ball, shook off a defender, and fell into the end zone.
But I'm sure it sounded very similar with Marshawn Lynch, too.
Yeah, I have the 1 yard TD as well when he jumped over for the 1 yard, got in for the 1 yard TD. But, I mean, Franny, how do you feel about the Eagles season? Just, here it comes to an end.
It was an up and down season. It was really disappointing towards the middle of the season with the way they were playing. It looked like they were not playing with that much effort. I mean, there was no effort whatsoever. They ended up winning the last four games. With their backups, with practice squad guys, and it was great to see them play with that passion, play with heart, play with some dignity. It's what I expected from the Eagles all season long. Unfortunately, it was close to the end of the season when we were decimated with all the injuries. On this podcast, if you've listened to me, I've been disappointed with a lot of the Eagles' losses because I knew they could have won those games. Whereas they lost, but I'm not disappointed in the way that they played. They went down fighting, and that's all you can ask for. If you're a Saints fan and you watch, basically a team that has all of their starters and they fail to win a playoff game, whereas the Eagles have, all these second, third, fourth string guys playing, you just have to be proud with the effort that they put forward. And, we lost, but it was a battle. The last four games, it was basically playoff games. It was excitement towards the end of the season. For me, and I'm sure you too, Ben. I mean, you also watch the Eagles well.
For sure.
So, watching them beat, all of their division opponents and to kick the Dallas Cowboys out of the playoffs was just as sweet.
absolutely.
As any playoff win. It is what it is. I expected, one team is going to go forward. And like I said in other podcasts, the Seahawks have a better chance going forward than the Eagles would have, even if they did win.
Yeah, I almost said, I feel like you guys had a reverse Roethlisberger. A similar season to what the Steelers had, only you had your quarterback. You lost everybody else but your quarterback. You lost, everyone in the secondary. You had guys on a line out. You had offensive tackles out. You had, running backs hurt. Howard was hurt. I can't remember who else was hurt. Went down. Jeffrey went down.
Yeah.
DeSean Jackson went down.
I mean, Corey Clement has been out the entire year. Sproles out pretty much the entire year.
Everybody that could be hurt was hurt.
Lane Johnson losing him on the offensive line. Brandon Brooks not having him on the offensive line. That's
huge.
And
he lost a linebacker in the game against Seattle.
Yeah, I can't remember who it was, but yeah. I mean, just a lot of injuries, and it was unfortunate. It was unfortunate to lose all those guys, but just the effort put forward by the guys that were in the game. We found a replacement for Darren Sproles. Boston Scott, well, definitely, I'm sure he'll be back next year.
Yeah, he looked good. He looked good in this game.
And even Ward, I would keep Ward as well. He's a dual threat. He could be a receiver. He could also be a quarterback if necessary. So
Andy Dalton to the Eagles. That's what Franny was saying before we began recording this podcast. He's got dreams of Andy Dalton.
No, as a backup, I wouldn't be disappointed. If Andy Dalton was our backup quarterback, I wouldn't mind that.
I think the Eagles should be really proud of what they accomplished. I know they didn't play particularly well in the middle of the season, but there was a lot of adversity going on in the middle of the season as well. But with the number of injuries that they sustained, I know that it was a pretty poor division this year,
yeah,
but I think with the injuries that I rattled off, which are probably only a fraction of the total injuries they sustained this year, to be able to pull themselves together, get to the playoffs, and be competitive in a playoff game with their backup quarterback, I just think losing the quarterback was a bridge too far for the team. But they should be really, really proud of what they accomplished this year with bubblegum and Band-Aids and rubber bands to be able to get what Peterson did to be able to get them through and to the playoffs and almost winning that playoff game, or at least tying that game against the Seahawks. I think they should be really, really proud of what they accomplished.
I agree with you, Ben.
All right, Franny, what's next up on the big board?
Next up on the big board, Ben, is our divisional recap.
All right, we'll be right back with our divisional recap.
All right, and we have our divisional games, Ben. One of the games I wasn't able to watch because I was at work, but you did, Ben.
Yes, thank yourself for not having to watch that game.
The Vikings and the Niners from what I hear, the Niners won pretty handily in this one.
Yeah, the Niners completely dominated.
And you were very impressed.
I was extraordinarily impressed with the Niners. They dominated the Minnesota Vikings on both. I mean, the defensive line completely dominated Minnesota's offensive line, and Minnesota's offensive line just manhandled. The San Francisco 49ers offensive line manhandled what is a pretty good front for the Minnesota Vikings. Minnesota was seventh against the pass and ninth against the run this year, and the San Francisco 49ers just crushed and dominated them on both sides of the line. Garoppolo didn't have a spectacular game at all, because he didn't have to. He only threw the ball 19 times and only completed 11 passes for 131 yards. One, count them, one touchdown and one interception subtracted in the game. But they just completely dominated the Minnesota Vikings on the ground. Tevin Coleman, 22 carries for 105 yards and two touchdowns in the game. Mostert with 12 carries and 58 yards on the ground. Breida with 8 carries and 17 yards on the ground. And even Garoppolo with 4 huge carries for 0 yards on the ground. But they literally just dominated them in every phase of the game. I was really, really, really shocked with how well they played at full strength on defense, with Bosa back there and Mosley and Buckner and Armstead. I mean, it was quite a shocker to me, anyway, to see how they were able to dominate him. D Ford was back this week as well. I mean, it was something else. I mean, it really, really was something else to see. I mean, I've never seen a team get this dominated in a playoff game as I did today. It was amazing.
Yeah, I mean, the Niners were a 7-point favorite in this one.
They were 6.5, 7-point favorite in this game. And Quan Williams was back in this game as well. They were at 100% full strength on defense. What's that?
Winning by 17 in this one. I mean,
I took Minnesota because I thought they would keep it close. I mean, I took them in the points
for about 10 minutes.
And it was just, I mean, Cousins couldn't get anything going. 21 of 29 for 172 yards, and count it, one touchdown and subtract it, one interception in the game. But Dalvin Cook was completely bottled up by the front for the San Francisco 49ers. 9 carries for 18 yards. There were more 3-and-outs than I could count in this game. The Cook couldn't get anything going at all. Diggs dropped a couple big passes, although he did have 2 receptions for 57 yards. Dropped a couple big balls. Adam Thielen was completely shut down by Richard Sherman and company. 5 catches for 50 yards, and he was the victim of a Richard Sherman interception because Thielen could not move his feet, because apparently stitches is now an injury in the NFL. Stitches is a cut. It is not an actual injury, although it may have been sore. But I didn't see Thielen barking at Kirk Cousins.
Try playing with a torn hamstring.
Yeah. I mean, but Thielen, I mean, I remember last year he was whining and complaining to Kirk Cousins in that playoff game. Last year, Thielen got completely dominated by this defense. So maybe.
He didn't make the playoff last year.
Or a year before, he was screaming at Cousins on the sideline.
Well, I think it was just at the end of the game. Because if they won the last game of the season last year, they would have been in the playoffs.
Oh, right, right.
But they lost, which allowed the Eagles to sort of sneak in. Yeah. That's when they sort of, you know, went off on the sideline.
But Cousins, being the bigger man, did not get in his face and tell him that he played like straight trash today, which he did. But everyone else that played for the Minnesota Vikings today played terribly as well.
They went farther than everybody expected, though. I mean, they made it to the divisional round. You know, nobody expected them to get past the Saints. But, you know, the Niners have been impressive all year long. Their front four is dominant, especially with everybody coming back from an injury now. This is going to be a really tough team to beat going forward for anybody. I mean, you know, next round, whoever they play, whether it's the Packers or the Seahawks, and if they make it to the Super Bowl, whoever they play there, whether it's Tannehill and the Titans or maybe Kansas City.
But I mean, it was something to see. I mean, it really was. Yeah. I mean, the creative run plays that Kyle Shanahan drew up in this game for Coleman, mm-hmm.
And that's what I love about
their
run plays. I mean, there is creativity in the way they move the ball.
I mean, there was so much misdirection in this game that the Vikings defense had no idea what was happening.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there were a couple of rollout plays with Garoppolo where he completed passes down the field where the defense was completely on the other side of the field. They mm-hmm. just had no clue what was happening. I mean, the Niners were good.
Yeah.
I mean, that was the story of the game. That was the story of the game. I mean, even on that touchdown, Coleman was barely touched on the play. He squirted right into the end zone, almost untouched on that play. It was really, really something to see. I have not seen a team get that dominated or a team that played that mm-hmm. dominant on defense. You think the Steelers' defense was good this year? That defense today, if they can play at that level, there's no one that's left in the playoffs.
Steelers were good at takeaways. I mean, that was the Steelers' forte this year was takeaways. But, I mean, the Steelers don't have a dominant front four like the Niners
no,
do.
Yeah. But you put him up against Patrick Mahomes, and he has no chance. Mm-hmm. If they're able to play the way they played, I know it was Kirk Cousins that's and good. Dalvin Cook and Mike Zimmer, for God's sakes. I mean, it's time to do something with this team.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, 3 years in a row, same team, or they missed the playoffs last year.
Yeah.
But they keep sending the same team back there. You know, Mike Zimmer just doesn't – I mean, they're throwing balls 3, 4, 5 yards down the field. 12, 13 minutes to go in the fourth quarter, you're down by 3 scores, you punt.
Yeah,
that makes no sense. 9 minutes left in the game, you're down by 3 scores, you punt.
Yeah. What do you expect you're going to do?
What the fuck is that?
What do you expect you're going to do? I mean, seriously, you're just going to give the ball back to the offense.
What do you think? How many possessions do you think you're going to get against the Niners?
Seriously. I mean, even if they just run the ball, they're going to run the clock. I mean –
They just ran the ball, and if they picked up a first down, they did. Otherwise, they punted.
Exactly.
I mean, but to punt the ball 3 times in the fourth quarter,
you don't
down
have 13
by
timeouts.
3 scores.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's unforgivable.
Yeah. No. Yeah.
And the one good thing that came out
that's
of this
like
game,
what you do if you don't know the game of football.
Yeah, I mean, it was when I saw him punt with 9 minutes to go, I was like, is this happening? you're down by 3 touchdowns. With 9 minutes to go.
Yeah, like I said, I watched the highlights. I'll try to catch the highlights of this game, but I wasn't able to watch it. But from what you're saying, Ben, it seems like it was just the Niners, just a complete domination by the Niners.
But I could see. I mean, I could see why the Cleveland Browns hired Freddie Kitchens over Kevin Stefanski. I can understand that now, because I have never seen a more piss poor offensive game plan and fewer adjustments in game than I saw from Kevin Stefanski today. They had no idea what was happening in the game. They had no clue what the Niners defense was trying, and they had no way to even manage it to get the game within 2 scores. They just couldn't do it. I mean, do not hire Kevin Stefanski. I know it was one game, but that was horrific.
That's just something you do not do.
But it was the same play over and over. I mean, Dalvin Cook, hand the ball off. Take a step. I mean, he would take a step backwards to try to survey the defense, and they were on top of him. I mean, the people were dropping passes. Kirk Cousins, he tried.
Yeah.
You can't put it all there was so much pressure coming up the middle of the defense, and that is his kryptonite. He can't move laterally. So, I mean, they were all four. I mean, he was sacked on fourth down twice. They were on fourth down, they didn't care. They weren't trying to protect the ball downfield. They weren't trying to prevent. They just brought the house, and they just smothered him. And he should be happy he survived this game and got through this game in one piece.
He didn't get winced.
It was terrible.
Uh-huh.
I love the Seattle Seahawks. I love my wife. But if they're able to dial up this kind of defense in the remaining game, in the championship game, if it happens to be against the Seahawks, good luck. And if it's Aaron Rodgers, this could be your last game, because that defense is amazing. Remember the defense that they have when they almost made it to the Super Bowl, and even that Denver defense that Peyton Manning was lucky enough to play on the other side of. This defense is as good as that, but twice as physical.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's amazing what I saw today. I can't overstate it.
Yeah, I mean, Shanahan had them prepared for this game, and I think the fact that they played their starters week 17 actually benefited them, because the next game we're going to talk about, the Ravens, they were off for 3 weeks and they looked a little rusty coming into this one.
Ooh, Yeah. It was brutal.
This was a shocking result. As shocking as that Titans-Patriots game was, this was even worse. Nobody expected this.
No. I mean, what was the game? What is the game we're talking about, Frank?
Titans Ravens, oh, Ben, and you love. I'm sure you love this result.
Finally, I can say something shitty about the Ravens.
You have not the entire season. You've talked shit about the Bengals for some reason. I mean,
because the Bengals are poorly run.
The Bengals are just a shit team, and you would talk shit about them the entire season on this podcast,
of course,
and the Browns too,
of course.
But the Ravens, for some reason,
they're a terrible franchise run by terrible people with terrible players.
The Ravens, for some reason, you wouldn't say anything negative about them.
Well, because they were playing so well, they were so put together. John Harbaugh hadn't become a complete douchebag yet. Lamar Jackson didn't try to take someone's head off at that point as a quarterback. I mean, personally, if I were the Titans, I would have taken a serious fucking shot at Jackson in this game. I would have taken a 15-yard penalty, no questions asked. After what he did on that interception by taking that guy around the neck, I would have what Jadeveon Clowney did to Nick Foles would look pretty calm compared to what I would have given my defense permission to do to that scumbag after what he did on that play. But, Franny, what do you think about the game?
I was shocked. I was shocked by the result. I mean, Lamar Jackson looked human in this game. You know, I mean. We're used to him just chucking the ball down the field, and when nothing's open, he just takes off running and jukes a few guys and picks up a first down. But
he looked like Kirk motherfucking Cousins in this game is what he looked like.
Exactly.
31 of 59 for 365 yards.
Crazy.
One touchdown, two interceptions, and a fumble in the game because he was carrying the ball like a loaf of bread. They looked like shit throughout this entire game. They were outcoached, outplayed, and out-prepared.
And throughout the season on fourth down, on fourth and short,
they
converted 8 out of 8 times. In this game, they were 0-for-2. Was it fourth and one and fourth and inches? They could not convert. And those two plays, to me, are the biggest plays in this game.
He couldn't even, on the fourth and inches, he couldn't even get to the line.
No way. I mean,
he got to the line and he had to turn around and take another shot at it.
Yeah. I mean, exactly.
he's like, all right, this isn't going to work.
Let me try this again. And he just got smothered. He got smothered in the backfield. The first one was a little bit closer, but there was no video evidence that would, cause them to overturn that at all. I mean, it looked like he was stopped short. In live action. In the replay, maybe the ball was close, but
that led to points as well, didn't it?
Exactly. I believe that did.
The fourth down on their own side of the field, on the Ravens side of the field, led to points.
That went straight. Yep. You have it, Ben?
Oh, no.
I thought you were looking at it. But that's that when they stopped him on the first fourth down play, the next play was Tannehill to the end zone touchdown.
I do have some audio.
Goal, but back it up to the 12. Tannehill tosses, end zone. Oh, Jonnu Smith, touchdown! Spectacular grab.
I love his reaction. Oh,
that was a beautiful fade pass, though. And Derrick Henry threw a touchdown in this game on a beautiful, beautiful trick play. But Ryan Tannehill, 7 of 14 for 88 yards. That was his line.
I didn't see that Henry touchdown.
Oh, yeah, he was...
Rosemary for you.
Mariota was in motion on the play. It was a direct snap to Derrick Henry, who threw the ball to the tight end, I think. I can't remember who the receiver was, but Henry, it was a direct snap to Henry, and he just sort of popped the ball up, and you could see he was just sort of like shot putting it out there. But Derrick Henry, 30 carries for 195 yards in this game.
Beast.
Tannehill carried the ball 6 times as well, but they didn't even have to get the ball moving through the air much. But even with Tannehill's 88 yards, it was extraordinarily efficient. 2 touchdowns and 88 yards throwing.
Yep.
I mean, the Ravens just looked horrific.
Like you said, Derrick Henry, 30 carries, 195 yards, no touchdowns. But passing, 1 for 1, 3 yards, count them. One huge touchdown.
I mean, the Titans were just, they recovered 2 fumbles at least in the game. They had 2 interceptions in the game. The Titans defense just came to play.
I poured the shot for you, Ben. I'm waiting for you to say something negative.
I mean, it's they're gone now. everyone knows that John Harbaugh is a douchebag. Everyone knows that he coaches his players to be, you know, on the edge between illegal and legal contact on the field. He's not a particularly nice person to be around. And it's nice to see the Baltimore Ravens, with all of their fans in the Charm City that have made the Pittsburgh Steelers' life so miserable for so many years, go down in flames against an inferior team from the AFC South of all divisions without. And it's not the Colts with Andrew Luck. It's not the Texans with Deshaun Watson. It's the scrap heap off the junkyard, Ryan Tannehill and Mike Vrabel.
Don't say that about Tannehill. And
Mike Vrabel, he's not even a protege of Bill Belichick, because he never coached with Bill Belichick. But he just had that team so prepared. And even after they got out to that big lead, they still played really, really hard. They never let the Ravens even sniff that they were going to get back into this game. And Jackson was throwing the ball all over the field. His receivers were dropping the ball. The throws were short. They were long. He broke off a couple nice runs. But by and large, he looked completely befuddled. He did not look like the MVP of the league.
Mm-hmm.
Unlike Mahomes last year, granted they did not make it to the Super Bowl last year, but they fell short of it. But Mahomes looked really, really good right up until
they fell
the
short
end.
Because of that defensive penalty lining up.
D Ford. So it wasn't like they didn't come close. But Lamar Jackson did not look like I know the MVP is based on the regular season, but you can't play that awful.
Oh yeah,
An inferior team and expect to get the MVP award. That he doesn't deserve it after that performance.
I mean, he'll still probably get it, but it was pretty embarrassing to lose in front of your home crowd.
Baltimore, Charm City. Bye bye,
there's
Johnny.
There's your shot right there, Ben.
Bye bye, Johnny.
He did call Harbaugh a douchebag.
Well, he is. And per everyone hour knows agreement, that. Everyone knows that.
I mean, him and his brother both are douchebags. I mean, they're both good coaches. Fan. But to waste a season like
and
this.
Here goes the shot.
I mean, they were 14-2 this season. 14-2, and to just squander that to a 9-7 team that barely made the playoffs. I mean, the Titans look dangerous, though. I mean, kudos credit to them and Vrabel. And what they've done, and Derrick Henry, the way he has been running the ball towards the latter half of the season, he's been amazing. You know, full credit to them and the coaching staff there.
Derrick Henry.
We approach 5 minutes to play, first half here in Baltimore, 14-3. The Titans in front. Handoff, Henry. Henry takes it to the outside. Oh, the stiff arm.
Oh,
twice on Thomas.
Sorry, Earl Thomas. You can't tackle me. You can't tackle me, Earl Thomas. Earl Thomas just backed off and was like, I don't know what to do here. Did you see that 60 or 70-yard run he broke off in this game where he was beating DBs down the field? He almost scored on it.
Yep.
I think it was like a 60-yard run. Oh, bye-bye, Baltimore. Oh, this feels good. It feels good. It feels so good. Because that's really our biggest rival in the division in terms of being competitive to win the division. I mean, the Cincinnati Bengals and Cleveland Browns are... You know, they're in the same division.
They're there.
But really, it's been Baltimore for the last decade that we've been battling with.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a couple years there, Cincinnati with Carson Palmer. But
Andy Dalton.
And Andy Dalton. But we never really battle with Andy Dalton because he's Andy Dalton. But to see Baltimore go down, to see John Harbaugh completely just as prepared as they are, as well-coached as they are, but to watch traditional football crush whatever that thing that he's trying to do over there, just crush it into dust, was really, really, it was enjoyable for me. Because what they're trying to do
sweet,
over there,
sweet victory,
can't win full. I mean, it's the same thing they did with Kaepernick at San Francisco. You can't do that for years on end. You can maybe catch lightning in a bottle like they did in San Francisco, but eventually Jackson's going to get the crap knocked out of him, and he'll be out for a season, now for two seasons. But man, that was really an enjoyable experience for me. And it's really hard to root against this Vrabel team. It really is. They play hard. They're beasts on defense. They're big guys.
If the Steelers had won, one of the last few games of the season, I mean, it might have been the Steelers in the playoffs, and the Titans would have never even been in it.
And we don't, I mean, this team, we don't just, I mean, it sounds strange coming from a Steeler fan. We can't play like this.
I mean, they're going to the AFC Championship game.
Yeah, we can't play like this. They deserve it.
Both games on the road, too. I mean, it's going there 9-7.
Vrabel, give that guy credit.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I mean, but 31 of 59.
That's, yeah.
31 of 59. How are you throwing the ball 59 times? And when they got down in that 14-point hole early in the game, I mean, if you ask me, the play of the game or the turning point of the game was going into the second half when I think it was 14-3, and Lamar Jackson was driving them down the field. There was a long pass to Marquise Brown, I think, that got him within inside the 10-yard line, and the Titans were able to hold them on that drive to a field goal.
Yeah.
I think there were about 3 seconds left on the clock at the end of the half, and they were able to hold them to a field goal. And I actually think I texted Fronny. I think I said it was fun while it lasted.
Yeah, we thought it was,
this game is old. I mean, it's going to be 10-14. They're going to get the ball after the half, and they're just going to run away with it. But when they were able to hold them to a field goal on that drive, I thought they had a chance.
Mm-hmm.
All right, Fronny, what's...
But they did not.
Anything else to add?
And your grin is as large as mine was last week with the Eagles.
I don't like Baltimore. I know.
But with the Eagles, you know, going into the playoffs, you know, the next day... I mean, you're smiling just as large as I was.
Well, because I mean, it's just so. I mean, John Harbaugh is such an asshole.
Feels so good inside.
He's such an asshole. I mean, if it was Belichick, you know, Belichick's an asshole, but in a different way. You know, like he's an asshole. Like I just want to do my job. Stop bothering me. You know, John Harbaugh's like an asshole. Like I'm just an asshole. Like you'd see him in public, and he'd be like, you know, he would just not be nice to you. I think Bill Belichick would hold the door open for me at a restaurant. I think John Harbaugh would just slam it in my face.
Well, if you were wearing, you know, Steelers
even
gear.
If I wasn't. Sorry, Charm City. Next year.
No, you're not.
Next year.
No, you're not.
MVP, Patrick Mahomes.
Next up on the big board.
Yeah, what is next up on the big board?
Our divisional picks. We still have two games tomorrow. We have the Texans and the Chiefs and the Seahawks and the Packers. So first up, Ben, the Texans and the Chiefs. Who do you think will win that one?
Oh, do we have to pick this game? The Texans and the Chiefs. I know I bet this game because I think it was a 10-point spread when it opened. I'll take the Chiefs. I don't think they're going to win by 10, although they have been blowing people out all year long. I think their average margin of victory is like 20 points.
I'm going to choose the Chiefs in this one also, and I think the Chiefs will actually blow them out. I think the Chiefs should win this game pretty easily. With the Texans, I'm just not sure which Texans team is going to show up. They've been so inconsistent all year long, whereas the Chiefs have not been. I mean, when Mahomes has been in the game, they've been good. They've been pretty dominant. And he is playing tomorrow. And the Texans, they didn't look that good last week. They barely won that game. It's going to be even worse for them in this one. I can see the Chiefs winning this one easily, and I'm rooting for Andy Reid. All the way.
I mean, you take a quarterback that's better than Lamar Jackson. You take a coach that's better offensive play caller than John Harbaugh. And you put those two together with the weapons that they have on that team. And a defense that in the second half of the season
they've been pretty good.
Has been playing really, really well. Mm-hmm. I mean, that defense behind, I know he was a laughingstock for a while, but Steve Spagnuolo, he's got that defense playing really, really well down the stretch here. Mm-hmm. I mean, they have been almost, dare I say, dominant in the last few games.
Yeah.
I think 10 points is a lot of points. But I think, given their margin of victory, the spread probably should have been, you know, 14 or more. But, yeah, I mean, I think that Reed is going to put an ass whooping on Deshaun Watson and the Texans and Bill O'Brien tomorrow. I mean, if they can tackle, and I think they're better tacklers. I mean, the reason that they won the game against the Bills was only because the Bills can't tackle. I mean, I know that Deshaun Watson's college coach this week compared him to Michael Jordan, the Michael Jordan of quarterbacks. That's a pretty bold statement since he hasn't gotten to the Super Bowl yet. But I think that if they bottle him up on that last play of the game, the Bills are playing today.
Mm-hmm.
So it shouldn't have been that close to begin with. I think they're capable of scoring a ton of points with Hopkins and that running game and Carlos Hyde and the rest of those guys.
They've been okay.
Will Fuller is supposed to play. But I'm supposed to be a millionaire at this point in my life, and I'm not. But Will Fuller is not going to. And if he does play, you know, he'll probably get hurt in the first quarter. So I wouldn't count on Will Fuller's participation in this game, even though everything is saying that they will, that he will play. Chiefs by 7.
All right, you got the Chiefs. I got the Chiefs, Ben. Let's go Chiefs. Next up.
Go Chiefs.
Next up. Seahawks and Packers playing at Lambeau in 20-degree weather.
Oh, see, I wish they'd played today. It was snowing today. I wish they had played today. It was snowing up there.
Frozen tundra.
It's literally the frozen tundra.
It will be tomorrow.
You should watch the story. There was a. I know this is a complete tangent, but I don't know if you remember. I don't know if you know this, but back when what's his name, the Lombardi was coaching the Packers. I don't know if it was the 60s. I think it was the 60s. He actually tore that entire field out and put heaters. His brainchild was to put heaters under the turf, the grass on the field. He actually tore the entire field out and put heating elements all the way under the field because he thought it would be better for the team to play on softer turf, and it turned the entire field into like a slushy, muddy fucking disaster area. So they had to tear it all out. So those of you that think that Vince Lombardi is a genius, maybe at football, but not at engineering.
Anybody could have saw that coming, except Lombardi.
Vince Lombardi.
And so who do you got in this one, Ben? The Seahawks and the Packers. You know, the Packers have been off for a couple of weeks now. The Seahawks barely making it by a shorthanded Eagles team.
What does your bobblehead say over there?
My bobblehead.
What does your Aaron Rodgers bobblehead say?
Let me. He's whispering something.
Yeah,
right
what
now.
Is he saying? Is he double check? Is it, what commercial can I do next week? I have like 10 coming out next week.
Discount double check. This is a tough one. It's a tough matchup. I mean, both teams, they match up pretty well. I mean, both, they have elite quarterbacks. I would say the Seahawks have better receivers, but they have quite a few injuries to deal with as well. Whereas the Packers, I believe they're almost pretty much at full strength right now.
Yeah, right now, Seahawks are unfortunately going to miss probably Mike Iupati, Ziggy Ansah, Marquise Blair, Dwayne Brown, George Fant, all on the offensive line. Defensive tackle Quentin Jefferson, who hasn't been playing great, but he does have his moments. But definitely Mike Iupati is going to be out. Packers are missing no one of note. Defensive tackle Kenny Clark, who I've never heard of. Defensive tackle Tyler Lancaster, who was sick, but he could potentially play. Dick Vitale, their running back, who, you know, that's not Aaron Jones, so it doesn't quite matter. And running back Dexter Williams is also potentially not going to play. But that's the only injuries the Packers have.
Yeah, nothing serious. So, Ben, this is your wife's team, the Seahawks.
That's why I'm trying to get you to pick first. I don't know if you could tell.
All right. So I'll go ahead and pick first. I mean, I think the Packers will win this game.
Really?
I think the Packers will win this game.
Really?
But I think it's only because the Seahawks will beat themselves in this one like they did last year. And they almost did against the Eagles, too. There's something about the play calling. I'm not sure what's going on in the mind of Pete Carroll at times. He doesn't take advantage of what the defense is giving him. And it seems like every game he goes out there and he just chooses to do things the harder way. You know, he chooses the hardest path to victory every single week.
Maybe like running Marshawn Lynch 25 times
this
tomorrow?
This week against Aaron Rodgers in the frozen tundra, I just think the Packers will win. I just think they have enough to win this game.
So and that's not going to be my mind. You're afraid of Schottenheimer-itis.
It's going to be a close one, but I could see the Packers just barely pulling this one out.
Well, I don't disagree, but they have the better quarterback. The Seattle Seahawks have the better quarterback. Now,
that's debatable.
Rodgers is 36, going on 37.
It's not like Russell Wilson is 25 years old.
He's 32-ish. Yeah. I don't even know. He's been playing for what?
He moves well. He's playing for eight years.
What's he, like 30, 31?
Yeah.
I would say they have the better playoff quarterback. Let's put it that way. The injuries are a problem. All the running backs are out, with the exception of, you know, Marshawn Lynch and Travis Homer and Michael Turner, who wasn't playing football until, you know, 2 weeks ago.
Hey, the Eagles had no problems.
That's true. Well, Jordan Howard played most of the year.
Yeah, Boston Scott and
Miles Sanders played most of the year.
Boston Scott came in there and played. You know,
he did. You know, the receivers are all healthy. I mean, that's a benefit. I mean, and that's what that's why I agree with Ronnie in this regard. I mean, they have Lockett is healthy, DK Metcalf is healthy. The rest of the receivers are healthy. Their tight ends, for what they are healthy. Other than the ones they lost earlier in the year, or the what's his name they lost Disley earlier in the year. I think. I tend to agree with Ronnie. If they can commit to throwing the ball downfield early, I think the Seahawks will win this game easily.
Mm-hmm.
I think they can I think if they can commit to throwing the ball, I think they can win the game by 14. Will they do that? I doubt it. But maybe if Marshawn Lynch and Michael Turner and Travis Homer are not able to be successful early on in the game, they will have no choice but to turn to the passing game. But I'm going to pick the Seahawks by 4.
All right. So you got the Seahawks, Ben. I got the Packers.
Can't believe you're picking the Packers over your own family.
Well, you know, I'm not.
And he's
not,
got the bobblehead here. He's got.
Well, you bought it for me. That was one of that was yeah,
that,
a part
that is true.
Of,
that is true.
This was the gag part
well,
of the Christmas
gift. I was tired of
gift.
Hearing about Aaron Rodgers.
His
world championship against
of
the Steelers.
Aaron Rodgers, but he did win it. So he has one.
That's true.
Like
him
Russell
and
Favre
both have one.
Exactly.
But he's not in the top 100
but
quarterbacks
I'm not
of all
saying
time.
That the Packers will win it. I'm just saying the Seahawks will lose it.
Yeah, and that's too bad. Because, I mean, it almost happened against the Eagles.
It did
happen against the Cowboys last year.
Mm-hmm.
What they need is the type of game.
I mean, in the Super Bowl against the Patriots, they lost that game. The Patriots didn't win it.
And they lost it by doing the opposite of what they normally do.
Exactly.
They lost it by throwing when they should have been running.
It's, you know, even animals
he's like George
in the
Costanza.
Wild. Yeah.
Whatever I think I should do, I'm going to do the opposite. I think the Seahawks should win this game just based on talent.
Yeah, I mean, even in the wild, animals will take the path of least resistance. Pete Carroll takes the hardest path that he can to victory, and that, I think, will be his downfall in this one.
I mean, is this the year that he changes his stripes a little bit, potentially?
No.
Do you know when the Seahawks last won a playoff game in Green Bay or last won a game this time of year in Green Bay?
I know they won one in Minnesota not so long ago. Outside.
In Green Bay, the last time they won a game at Green Bay on the road this time of year was in 1999.
So they're due.
Was it 1999? When the Seattle Seahawks were in the AFC West.
Huh.
So
I guess they're due is what you're saying.
Well,
it's been a long time.
If defensive coordinator Mike Pettine can keep the Seahawks somewhat bottled up, I think the Seahawks are more talented.
Yeah.
Other than Aaron Jones, Devontae Adams, decent defensive line, and Aaron Rodgers. But I think the Seahawks have them at the receiver position, and I still actually kind of think they have them at the running back position.
Are you changing
Homer
your mind?
And
are you changing
Lynch?
Your pick?
No. I'm going to go with the Seahawks by 4.
So you got the Seahawks. By 4. I got the Packers. Sonya, I'll make her choice. I'll make her decision. I'm sure Sonya would choose the Packers.
Yeah, she would.
She would. But, you know, I would do the same thing if it was the Eagles playing tomorrow. I also choose the other team. Yeah.
Well, they're at home. It's Lambeau.
Yeah.
All the mystique of championships that happened 50 years ago. I mean, it's very, you know, it's ominous.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
All right, Friday, what's next up on the big board?
Next up on the big board, Ben, is our Super Bowl predictions. I sort of made one last week.
Yes, you did.
And I was wrong. I was very wrong.
Well, not very wrong.
The Saints would go to the Super Bowl, and they did not. So, or they will not be.
They did not.
So, Ben, there's a few teams left. With the teams remaining, who would you choose right now to go to the Super Bowl?
I think it's going to be the Chiefs versus the Seattle Seahawks.
That would be awesome. I don't think it's going to happen with the teams that are remaining. I didn't watch that 49ers game, but with the way you've been talking them up and how impressed...
I can't choose against them.
How impressed,
I can't do it.
How impressed you were with them today.
I'll tell you this. If I were not married, I would choose...
So...
I would choose the Chiefs versus the Niners.
All right. You know,
but the Niners win.
I would
the game.
Love to see Kansas City go. I mean, it would be a great story to, you know, for the Titans to go to the Super Bowl.
Hell, they might.
Yeah, the way they're playing right now, they're playing really good. I mean, the second half of the season, they have been impressive ever since Tannehill took the reins. But I kind of want Kansas City only because of Andy Reid.
We tried this last year, remember?
I know. I'm trying it again. So,
I mean, all of our teams were eliminated.
Yeah,
I know. We were really rooting for Andy Reid last year. We even made a shot for you.
I'm rooting for the Walrus once again. I want Andy Reid to make it, to finally win one. He wasn't able to do it with the Eagles after so many trips to the NFC Championship game, after making it to the Super Bowl once he wasn't able to pull it off. I'm rooting for Andy Reid. I want it to be Kansas City, but in the NFC, I think the best team right now, without even watching them today, but as impressed as you were, you're not usually this impressed with teams.
Holy shit, they played well today.
I'm going to choose the Niners. So it's, you know, the Niners and the Chiefs in the Super Bowl, and I'm going to be rooting for, I would root for Kansas City only because of Andy Reid, but I would believe that they just don't have the talent on defense that the Niners do. And, you know, defense wins championships, and that's what the Niners do the best, at least for the teams remaining.
Yeah, I think we agree. I mean, like I said, I mean, if I'm choosing from my heart, I would choose the Chiefs and the Seahawks. If I'm choosing by what I actually watch with my own eyes this year, now that the Ravens are out of the playoffs, it wouldn't shock me if the Titans were able to beat the Chiefs. If the Chiefs win tomorrow, it wouldn't shock me if the Titans beat them.
Yeah,
because they're playing really, really good football right now. I mean,
they're running the ball well. They're running the ball well. Their defense is playing well. Their quarterback is, you know, he could play just as well as any quarterback remaining right now. So
yeah, I mean, it's pretty shocking. But after what I saw today and from the Niners down the stretch, even in a few games that they lost, they were really, really, really close games.
Mm-hmm. I think the only game they got blown, was it a blowout against the Ravens? I think that was the only game that they really lost by more than 3 points.
Yeah.
You know, so,
and it wasn't even a blowout.
Yeah,
blowout.
Yeah.
And I would say that's going to be Chiefs versus the Niners with the Niners winning the game.
Yeah.
Unfortunately.
Yeah. Yeah,
I'm rooting for Andy Reid.
Oh, Andy Reid.
Because
for sure.
I mean, no one universally.
I mean, he's been in the league for 20 years.
But
now,
even when you hear other players talk about it, other coaches talk about it, universally, I feel like I haven't heard anyone say a negative thing about Andy Reid. Most people are rooting for him, league figures as well as fans of the game. I don't think there's anyone out there that really wants to hang out and have a beer with Kyle Shanahan or Mike Shanahan, for that matter. Universally, not particularly great, friendly dudes. You know, pretty Tom Coughlin-esque in their approach to the game. Granted, they get results, but Andy Reid is able to... I mean, he's got that same sort of, chemistry set that Pete Carroll has. I mean, he's a much better play caller than Pete Carroll on offense, but he has that sort of same chemistry set where he wants to get along with his players. He wants his players to get along with each other. He wants to have some fun when they go to work every day and when they go to play a game on Sunday or Saturday now this time of year. And it'd be tough to root against him.
Yeah.
I hope Andy Reid is able to be victorious unless he plays the Seahawks.
It seems like we're both choosing the Niners and the Chiefs. Although if Sonia's listening, it's the Seahawks and the Chiefs.
For sure.
But she's not going to listen to this podcast anyways.
No.
So
no.
The Niners and the Chiefs, I think we're both on the same wavelength.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Unfortunately. All right, friend, what's next up on the big board?
Next up on the big board, Ben, is our shout-outs to our fellow podcasters out there.
All right, all of our fellow independent NFL podcasters out there. We do this for the love of football, not for any other reason. We do this simply because we enjoy each other, we enjoy the sport, and we enjoy bringing you our insights as they are. And we want to support each other. There's lots of money going into big podcasts at CBS and the NFL Network, and we just want to support each other to the extent that we can. So I want to give a shout out to the Collapsing Pocket podcast, hosted by three British football fans, Rob, C, and Sam. This show tackles all the topics that are related to the NFL news, drafts, and even they even create their own unique segments almost every week. This show is a blast to listen to each and every episode from the Down Under. Check them out. You can find them on Apple Podcasts. Please look for a link in the show note. You can get them on all major podcatchers as well as on Twitter at Pocket Crumble. And you can shoot them an email anytime at collapsingpocket@gmail.com. This is really, really a fun podcast from the Down Under. These guys love football. They're active on Twitter. They are funny as hell. They do a really, really great job talking about the NFL year-round, just like we do. They do not go off the air in the offseason. They do an awesome, awesome job. So please, please, everyone, check them out. Franny, what's next up on the big board?
Are we doing the betting corner, Ben?
Do
you have any bets? Or should we just go straight to the drinking portion?
Yeah, well, I mean, yeah. What's tomorrow? Tomorrow is...
It's the Seahawks and Seahawks, the Packers.
I think it's a four-point spread. I took the Seahawks. I think the Seahawks are getting 4 points at Green Bay. I would take the Seahawks in that game. The other game, I think I got the...
Kansas City.
I think they were 10-point favorites, so I took Houston and the points on that one, because I think 10 points is a little bit much, but I don't know that we need to go through all the overs and unders this particular week. Franny definitely doesn't want to.
You could. It's just that we're running a little long.
We are. So, yeah. Franny, what's next up on the big board?
Next up on the big board, Ben, is our shot of the week.
All right, everybody, hold tight. We'll be right back with our shot of the week.
It'll end very, very smoothly
and quietly.
Fade out. Okay. All right. So it's going to fade out. Like,
eventually.
Like Carson Wentz's memory.
Oh, but poor guy.
Once he got knocked in the head by Jadeveon Clowney. And tonight's shot.
He played one game. One playoff game for one quarter.
Is representative of that hit. On the back of his helmet, which drove his head into the turf.
I know, if you just look at the replay of it, you just see his head, his helmet just sort of slide through the turf.
And his face, just his eyes all closed.
You should be happy. At least it was turf.
That's true.
It was actually artificial turf, it might have been worse.
So tonight's shot is dubbed, appropriately, the cheap shot. Because that was sort of a cheap shot, whether intentionally or unintentionally, it was still a cheap shot. Should have never happened, but it did, and the NFL won't do anything about it. But Ben, tonight's shot was concocted with a little bit of Jim Beam, but a new Jim Beam. This is a Jim Beam that we've never tried before. It is
Jim Beam Apple.
Jim Beam Apple. I was going to look at the bottle here to see if it says sour apple, but it's actually Jim Beam Apple.
Like, I could just picture someone like in the South drinking this, like a woman drinking Jim Beam Apple and Coke, please.
You want to take a little sip out of the bottle?
Yeah.
Let me take a little sip, Ben. I tried a little bit.
This just seems like somebody you're selling to like college kids. It's actually like LSU.
It doesn't taste that bad, right?
Actually, it doesn't taste exactly. I think that's definitely selling to.
That's their market right there.
Yeah, I think lots of young men at colleges are very happy that they came out with this particular libation.
And so, along with that,
it's actually pretty good.
Jim Beam Apple. I added one of the cheapest, basically shots that you can buy. It's not a shot or an alcohol. Fireball. I mean, Fireball is like, you know, $9 for like 1.75 liters of this stuff.
Yeah, Costco, I think you have to buy a case. They won't even sell you one.
It's cheaper than water. I mean, you can probably buy a gallon of this stuff for less than you could buy, you know, sparklets or whatever. I mean, this stuff is really cheap. And so, you know, appropriately, I was at Total Wine and I tried to find the cheapest shit that I could find. And these were fairly cheap. I mean, the Jim Beam Apple is like $10. The Fireball is like, you know, $9. And
they were sold out of Boone's.
I don't even know what that is.
Oh, it's Boone's is like a wine cooler something. They sold it when I was a kid. It was like $1.99 for a bottle. It was like before $2 Chuck. It was $1 Chuck.
That's an extremely cheap shot.
It was terrible. It was terrible.
So, anyways, but I figured that these two flavors together would make a pretty good shot. You know, sour apple. I mean, cinnamon apple, basically. So you have the apple and the cinnamon together. And so let's just give this cheap shot a shot. Ben.
And what's the base? Is bourbon or whiskey the base of both of these?
In terms of
Jim Beam's bourbon, right?
Jim Beam, yeah.
What's the base of Fireball? Is it bourbon? Is it whiskey? Is it?
Oh, it says whiskey with natural cinnamon flavor.
So
I'm not sure where they get their whiskey from.
Whatever's left, whatever they ran off into the streams when Jim Beam burned down, whatever they scraped out of the river.
That's what it is.
Yeah, Jim Beam had to pay like $100 million or some insane amount to clean up the river down there.
Cheers, Ben.
Here we go.
Let's give us a shot.
Here's the hangover shot.
Yeah.
It's not bad.
It's actually really good. Fireball and
Jimmy
Apple.
I'm afraid of what it's doing to my insides, but.
Wow. For anybody out there that's looking
for a cinnamon apple.
A cheap shot.
A very cheap
shot. Tastes good. That will probably leave you with a headache in the morning if you drink too many. But that is a really good shot.
Yeah. I mean, this is something you would drink before LSU plays Clemson. If you live in. This would be the shot if you're tailgating.
Yeah.
Obviously the national championship game is never played where it's cold.
Yeah.
But this would be something you could definitely drink when you're tailgating or preparing to watch a game. Or if you have friends coming over that are not quite your closest friends and you want to give them something to drink that doesn't cost you a lot of money.
It's not bad though. That I would recommend that shot. A little bit of Jim
Beam. Did you make this? Is this a proprietary original?
Yeah, I mean, I didn't find it online. This is just, you know, my goal was to just find two cheap, you know, sort of drinks that I could, you know, pour together that would have a fairly decent flavor. And these actually taste better than decent. This is pretty good. It tastes really good.
It actually is really good.
Hmm.
It tastes like a sort of a cinnamon. That's like a red hot with a
some apple like
candied apple or
like
something.
A Jolly Rancher's apple sort of, you know, flavor to it.
I like it.
Yeah, not bad
at all.
I'm not
going to complain.
I thought it was going to be worse.
And Frane comes up with these shots every single week, just so you know. Every week for 54 straight weeks. Frane has come up with a new shot every single episode. When we started this podcast, we had no idea that this segment would become a regular segment that he would have to, you know, lose hours of sleep every week with anxiety. Trying to figure out what shot he would come up with every single week. And
actually, this morning I woke up at 4:30. I could not fall asleep, man.
Really?
I've been up since 4:30. I just can't. I couldn't fall asleep.
Well, because this. I mean, it's hard. I mean, it's a lot of pressure.
Not because of the shot. Just because.
Generally speaking,
I guess it was just insomnia.
I think it's. You know, I come up with the agenda. And Friday comes up with the shots, and he buys all of it and comes up with all of the beers and the scotches, bourbons, whiskeys that we taste. And he had to wait on me at his place of employment yesterday for two straight hours. So that was probably running through his mind at 4:30, hoping that I would not come back and do that to him again. But he does this every single week, folks. So please check out Instagram for pictures of this shot as well as every shot that he's concocted over the last year and a half or so.
And they're also on Twitter as well, Ben.
Yes, and I'll post it on Twitter. But this is pretty amazing stuff. I mean, pretty amazing. I mean, if you look at, I mean, the shot we had over the holidays with the eggnog was pretty awesome.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we just, and I was just looking back today. You'll see on Twitter, I posted some of our older
stuff.
Oh,
did you?
But, I mean, the Packer shot you did, I can't remember why we did that Packer shot, but that Packer shot was pretty amazing.
Sonia brought it up for some reason. I can't remember why we did it, but it was that was an interesting rim with the
Cheez-Its. With the Cheez Nips.
Cheez Nips. It was not Cheez-Its, Cheez Nips. So that was actually the cheaper sort of cracker, cheesy cracker.
Well, because, I mean, this is all because of you. I mean, turning me on to the Browns. I mean, so I'm
well, I mean, finally you came around. I mean, it took
and finally
years
you came around to the
years.
Real Browns.
Well, I mean, the Isla Scotches, I've sort of come around to those as well. I mean, I was more of just, you know, non-Isla.
But now that we're sort of now on Twitter, you know, people are asking me, you know, asking, you know, what do you think about this? What would you buy? And like today, I recommended the Old Forster 100. The Old Forster Rye 100, which was
the 1920 or
it wasn't the older one. It was I think it was the 100 Rye. It was the 100
proof
rye.
Oh, okay. I mean, there's better ones, but you know,
because people were looking for something that was like inexpensive.
Yeah, that is inexpensive.
Rye,
it is,
but really, so I'm having to. So I was going through sort of a lot of the
surprisingly
things that we
an inexpensive rye. Ben is the one that you and Sonia chose.
Well, but I wouldn't recommend Jim Beam rye to anyone that I care
but
about.
If they want something that's really cost effective. I mean, that is, it's not terrible. It's something you can sort of sip on. I'm not sure, you know, what kind of headache you'd have in the morning. But if they wanted something really cheap, it's actually not that bad, but also not that great either.
What would be your rye? I mean, if someone asked you, give me an inexpensive rye that I could probably get overseas, like in Europe where they have the duty.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know, the tax, something coming from the U.S.,
mm-hmm.
like a, you know, an inexpensive, sort, not inexpensive, but middle-of-the-road rye. The first thing that came to mind was the Old Forester.
The Balcones was also...
Oh, the Balcones was good, yeah.
That one is one that we tried very recently. The Sagamore is also something that I remember. The Sagamore rye was tasty, too. That one was, you know, fairly complex, smooth at the same time. But yeah, those both of those, the Balcones and the Sagamore, of the ones that we've tried recently, those are the ones that I would probably go with.
All right. Yeah, so I'm having to learn, and I like learning. All right, Freddy, what's next up on the big board?
Next up on the big board is our beverage of the week, Ben. It is not a rye. It is actually our very first Irish whiskey that we've tried on this show. We've had many scotches. We've had many ryes, many bourbons. We'd have cognacs. We've never had an Irish whiskey because they're usually not that good. And so this is our first one, Ben. You have some information for us for the Red Breast 12-year.
I do, and normally I have music for this segment, but because it's an Irish scotch or an Irish whiskey, I do not have Irish music for this particular one, so I'm going to have to substitute a little Scottish music, so please forgive us all.
Don't do it. Don't do it. Don't do it.
All right, not going to do
it. Don't do that. Just play the old school banjo music.
All right.
Yeah. There, let's just do that. Let's just do that. We don't want to upset any Irish listeners. Oh, we'll just
starting,
substitute you.
We're
you
starting
know.
Like a... okay, this is the Red Breast 12-year-old. This is the signature bottling. Red Breast 12 boasts the flavor, complexity, and distinctive qualities of pot still whiskey. It's matured in a combination of bourbon and sherry casks. The distinctive Redbreast sherry style is a joy to behold in each and every bottle. It's made from a mash of malted and unmalted barley and then triple distilled in copper pot stills. Redbreast 12 boasts the flavor complexity of pot still whiskey, matured in a combination. I just already said that. Matured in a combination of bourbon seasoned in American oak barrels and Oloroso sherry seasoned Spanish oak butts. Not sure what that is. The distinctive Redbreast sherry style is a joy to behold. The nose, a complex, spicy, and fruity aroma with toasted wood notes evident. The taste, full flavored and complex, silky smooth with a harmonious balance of spicy, fruity sherry and toasted notes. And the finish, satisfyingly long. The complex flavors linger on the palate. I'd be interested to hear Franny's take on this. I'm going to sniff it a little bit now that I haven't started a civil war.
Have you looked at a map? All right.
I have looked at a map.
I don't know. I mean, there's something about, because we, not on the podcast, but we had the Doers. We also tried a few others. The Jameson. The Proper 12. I mean, those are all Irish whiskeys that we have.
The Proper 12 was not bad.
That we've had in the past. Not on the podcast. We haven't actually sampled those on the podcast. This is the first one. The podcast. Where did that come from?
The podcast.
The podcast. But there's something about the way an Irish whiskey, it smells like there's more of a stronger alcohol sort of scent to it, right? I mean, it doesn't.
I don't get. I mean, I don't woody. Get the. I don't get the boldness in the body and on the nose. I don't get it.
There's a sweetness. There's a sort of a caramel sort of scent to it, but I mean, Irish whiskeys just have this sort of smell. Right? I mean,
smells like. You want to drink?
Like rye smelled. I mean, they're delicious.
Oh God, I love them.
Rye are delicious when you just sniff them. That sounds kind of weird, but
this smells like fuel.
Yeah, it does.
Like I'm gonna pour it in my car and drive.
It's not woody. It's not burning my nostrils or anything, but it's just something about Irish whiskeys that always, you know, throw me off. Just the smell itself. But I'm gonna sip on it. See. Oh, you already tried it?
No.
Oh, okay. Let's go, Ben. Cheers.
All right, let's go.
Cheers. Caramel vanilla.
I taste the sweetness.
It's sweet. Sweeter. Smooth finish. I mean, it goes down.
Very smooth.
Not much spiciness.
A little bit of an edge there on the finish, though.
A tiny bit of a kick. Not much. Just a little bit of spice, but you really feel the caramel, sort of vanilla, molasses. The color is really nice, though. I mean, if you look at the color is a nice sort of dark,
beautiful amber.
Yeah.
But it does have a little bit of a, I mean, it does have a distinct sweetness to it. Almost a sticky sweetness.
Slight creaminess. You know what?
It's very slight.
It sort of tastes like, you know, the finish, you know, a Tootsie Roll.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, that's a classic American sort of candy. It's like there's a cheap shit that they give you on Halloween. It's that old lady that doesn't want to spend much money on her candy. But it sort of gives you like, and not that I have anything against, I like Tootsie Rolls. I like the way they taste. But on the finish, there's a little bit of Tootsie Roll right at the back of the throat, like right on the back of your tongue. There's a little bit of Tootsie Roll. There's that sweetness, maybe just a slight bit of chocolatiness.
Yeah, now I taste it.
Yeah, I mean, that's
well, the United States borders on Canada as well as Mexico. That's pretty much the extent of my map knowledge. Right there.
I'm not sure who you guys are a civil war with, but since, you know, Ireland.
I get it. You can't start
Scotland,
a civil war with two distinct countries.
Exactly.
I get it.
Yeah. You figured it out. All right.
Friday is very, for the record, Friday is very, very knowledgeable when it comes to
geography.
Very, very knowledgeable.
But that's the sort of finish I get. I mean, and it's enjoyable. It's not.
It came really highly reviewed, though.
It is. Did. I mean, even at Total Wine on the shelf, they have the review from, you know, whoever's reviewing them. It was, I think, a 93, and I'm not really getting that. It's smooth, a little soft, not so creamy.
Even when I posted
no
it on Twitter.
Spice. I mean, it's
spice is almost overwhelmed by the
It's not complex. I mean, it goes down easily. It's really smooth, really easy to drink, but it doesn't make you think about it, you know?
You don't have a relationship.
Yeah, you still have a relationship with Ardbeg.
Yeah, I mean, it's my first love.
Yeah.
I'm going to talk about my relationship with Ardbeg in psychotherapy for the next 20 years. But even when I posted it on Twitter,
mm-hmm.
a lot of people responded to this tweet.
Yeah.
With, I love it. It's awesome. You're going to really like it.
I think they need to try more. I mean, they need to try, you know, Rise and, you know, maybe some of the Islas that we've had. I mean, it leaves me wanting more.
It tastes like a whiskey that I would, like if I walked into a bar and I was about to get into gunfight.
But it's smoother than that, though. It's smoother than, you know, just an off-the-shelf sort of whiskey that you would get at a bar. But it is a little bit smoother than that.
I mean, I do feel a little warmth on the finish. A little warmth on the finish.
A little bit. I mean, how would you rate this, Ben? I mean, you know, 1 to 10. From all of the whiskeys that we've tried on the show, all of the browns.
How many Irish whiskeys? Is this the first one?
This is our first Irish whiskey.
So the proper 12 we drank somewhere
that was,
else?
We just mixed it. Actually, we mixed it with one of our shots.
Because that's getting high reviews, but that doesn't mean anything.
Mm.
I would give it...
I mean, it's better... I mean, I've tried Red Spot. I don't know who the distiller is, because they obviously have Yellow Spot and Green Spot, but that one was good.
It lacks a warmth and a complexity and a flavor profile that I would want. I'd probably give it about a 5. I mean, if everything we've tasted so far with the Ardbeg being a 10.
I would not give Ardbeg a 10.
All right, with the Whistle Pig being a 10, I would give this.
Let's see.
Even the Eagle Rare.
Yeah, but those aren't 10.
The Eagle Rare was like an 8, probably.
I have to go back and look at some of the stuff that we...
I would say the Old Forester 100 was way up there.
I love the Willett. The Willett, the Straight Rye. The 4-year, that one, that's one that I have a relationship with.
I would put this on the rye scale. I put this like
but not a rye, just as a whiskey in general.
Like a redemption, like a 5 or 6.
Yeah, I'd give this maybe a 6. I'd give it a 6.
I mean, it just lacks something.
There's something missing on the finish. I mean, it has the nice caramel.
Because it's like vanilla. It is like a relationship.
I mean, I just get a Tootsie Roll. Like when you like bite into a Tootsie Roll, you kind of chew it up a little bit and you swallow it. That's kind of what I get from this, and that's what it reminds me of. I mean, maybe if you know other people have different flavor profiles, then
I just can't latch onto it. Like usually, there's something that I can latch onto, like the bitterness, or the sweetness, or the spice, or the caramel, or the smokiness, there's something I can latch onto and say, ooh, I like that. In this one, there really isn't anything that I'm sort of latching onto that makes me want to have more of it.
Mm-hmm.
Like this, to me, I'd mix with water and an ice cube.
Water might make it too soft. I mean, I think right now, the way it is, it's fine. It's smooth. It's easy to drink. And if you would just want to sit back...
That spice, the bite's not enough. Yeah, it's not enough. Like, I feel like there should be a little bit more.
Something at the finish. Something at the finish is missing.
A little bit more of a bite.
They also have the 15-year, and they also have a couple. But, I mean, this one, it's about $47 for that bottle. I mean, for the price, within that price range of around $50, there is a lot of better stuff that you can buy.
But now I'm going to have to drink more of it.
For around $50. Like the Ardbeg, for instance. You love the Ardbeg. The Ardbeg is a little bit more. But
like
not,
$5.
Not much more.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, it's like 56 or 60,
depending
something like
on
that.
Where you buy it. Obviously, it's between $50 and $60. Yeah. But I mean, you like that one.
It's really good.
You like it.
Well, you like it too.
Really.
The Port Charlotte, which I have sitting right over there.
The Port Charlotte.
That friend got me the heavily peated, heavily smoked.
Yeah, but that's also, you know, a different sort of you know, I mean, if I'm going to spend $50 on something, it wouldn't be this. I would rather spend $50 on, you know, a different scotch, not an Irish whiskey.
Just, it's smooth.
Smooth. Now you sound like me.
It's very smooth. It just lacks that oomph, that either the spice or the sweet or the smoke, something's missing.
All right, Ben.
What's next up on the big board?
Next up on the big board. The last couple of weeks, we've tried IPAs. We've tried Pilsners. This time I figured we'd try something dark. And we have something dark.
Very dark.
Coming up. So I'll get that cracked open and Ben will have the information for you.
All right, we'll be right back.
All right, and we are back with our beer review. Ben, I poured myself a glass. You have the bottle there in front of you, and you have some information for us.
I do. This is the Black Allagash from the Allagash Brewery. This is an interesting brew. I mean, it is amazing. The bottle, well, the bottle is black as night.
It's interesting and amazing.
It's a Belgian strong ale, 7.5% alcohol by volume, produced in beautiful Maine in the United States of America. It's an independent craft brew. It's fruity, chocolate, creamy, and roasted. The food pairings are dessert, fruit, vanilla, and caramel. The suggested glassware is a snifter, a goblet, or a chalice. That's an interesting grouping right there. This is the Allagash Black. It's a Belgian-style stout brewed with 2-row barley, torrefied wheat, oats, both roasted and chocolate malt, and a generous portion of caramelized candy sugar. The silky mouthfeel is a great balance to the roasted character, coffee, and dark chocolate notes expressed throughout this beer. Look for a link in the show notes.
It smells good.
Ronnie is smelling it.
You get the coffee, you get that burnt sort of flavor. I mean, I'm sure it comes from the grain, but it smells good. I mean, you can't smell it from the bottle right there, Ben, can you? I mean, try. Yeah, here, right, smell it from the glass.
Well, he has it in a snifter.
Yeah.
Oh, that smells really good.
It smells really good. Not so much chocolatey.
Is that he's drinking chocolatey? A stout.
It's not our first one. I enjoyed. There was one a couple months ago that we tried.
The Einstock Porter was good.
Oh, that one. I think it was that one was chocolatey and delicious. And
you really
smooth.
Liked that one.
That one I really liked. Yeah, and I don't drink a lot of dark. I mean, this is.
It's black.
It's like a very dark Coca-Cola.
Yeah, and you can look for this. The link is in the show notes to the website as well as more information.
Cheers, Ben.
All right, here we go. Oh, wow.
It's thick.
Oh, that's creamy.
It's thick. It's
toasted.
A little bit of little bit of coffee. Not so much chocolate.
Oh, wow. That's good.
But it is enjoyable. I mean, it's not something that you pound, you know, by the pool on a hot day.
In the summer, you know, on a floaty.
Like the Pilsner that we had last week. It was not very good, but it was something that you could drink a lot of. Whereas this one, you probably want to take your time, you know, sipping on this one, but you enjoy the flavors that you're getting from it. I mean, I think this one is, I think it's about 7 or 8%.
7.5.
7.5. And, I mean, it was highly rated. You know, it was 94 on whatever rating they have, at whatever magazine it was for total wine.
I like it.
But I see why. I mean, there's a lot of flavor coming through. Wow. I mean, you get that sort of burnt, roasted flavor with the coffee, maybe a little bit of chocolate right at the end of it. And it doesn't linger. You know, it doesn't stay in your mouth. Good. It's like it goes down, it's crisp, and it leaves you wanting more.
Let me just see what I'm supposed to taste here. Fruity, chocolate, creamy, roasted. It's definitely, I don't taste the fruit.
Yeah, it's not fruity. It actually has a slight bitterness to it, I like.
I mean, the chocolate is inherent in this type of beer.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But it's not as pronounced as it was
It's creamy?
That Einstock.
No.
Yeah.
The Einstock.
It's there. I mean, if you let it just linger, the aftertaste, you sort of get the chocolate.
Oh, a little bit of dark chocolate at the end.
Yeah. Dark chocolate's good for your heart.
Ooh. But, I mean, the Einstock is amazing.
Oh, yeah.
Every single Einstock. Yeah.
Yeah, all of them. All of them.
Iceland, I don't know what you're doing, but you make a hell of a beer.
At least Einstock is.
But this is really, really good.
That's good. This is good. You know, maybe next week I should get just like because this is an American brewery.
Is it? Oh yeah,
brewing a Belgian style beer.
Yeah.
I'll get a Belgian style beer made in Belgium.
Well, what do we have? We had the Guinness on St. Patrick's Day.
You did.
The most drunken of all the podcasts.
But that's that's the typical sort of dark beer that you'll get.
We had the Samuel Smith we tried at some point.
No. Actually, yes. Yes, that one we did.
We tried the Einstock.
And it's not very good.
Yeah, I wasn't a big fan. I had one in the refrigerator,
All of the British, like Boddington's.
Boddington's?
And we had one more that was pretty terrible, too. Yeah.
But Frane liked the porter from Einstock. He likes that the stout.
No, that one was, I mean, the porter, the stout, everything from Einstock, like you said, Ben, is anybody can enjoy that.
Yeah, so far, Einstock, everything's been good.
Mm-hmm.
El Segundo Brewing, which is a local company.
Everything
from them has been good.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
El Bucaron, which we can never seem to find anywhere.
We were big fans of because it's different. Different.
That's probably my all-time favorite beer that we've tasted on the show.
That's good.
It's
a good
really
beer.
Really good. It's creamy.
That is a good beer, Ben.
It's
how would you rate that? Like on our scale of 1 to 10. 10 being your Air Boqueron. I mean, I would rate the Air Boqueron more of an 8, but
I would probably give this about an 8.
This one I would also give this one 10. I would also give this one an 8. It's very enjoyable. It's heavy. It's thick. There's a lot of it. You know, I mean, You can't drink a lot of these, especially at 7.5%. But it's enjoyable. Just sipping on it, it is a very good beer. And even
get the heaviness though.
It's cold outside, and so I mean the beer is cold. On a warm day, just sitting, by the pool or after doing some yard work out here, Ben.
The yard work that you do.
This is you. I said all you. You. But this is not the beer you would grab. This is
not
more
a Busch Light.
Of a you sit down after a long day of work and you just want to sit in front of the TV and watch some Netflix or something, whatever you have streaming. Yeah, you grab one of these. It's gonna give you a nice buzz and it tastes good, and it has some complex flavors. It makes you think about you're drinking. Yeah,
and the presentation is great. The bottle is great. Look for it on Instagram and Twitter as well.
And actually, all of their
the bottles it's a really great presentation.
All of their beers were highly rated. This is just one of them. Eventually in the future we'll try another one. But this one is very good.
But it's just shocking to me how many microbrews are out there that we can get, even in California, from Maine, from Vermont, from across the ocean. If I ever looked at a map, I would know exactly where these places are. Apparently, Scotland is
Civil wars between Scotland and Ireland.
It's barely they are not close to each other, or they're separated by a country at least.
They're separated by water.
Well, boats travel across the water.
Yeah, yeah.
But this is a really good beer. Yeah, I would give it an 8 for a stout. It's definitely better than a Samuel Smith.
Oh, yeah.
And a lot of the stouts that I've had. Guinness, definitely better than Guinness.
Yeah, I mean, Guinness is sort of your run-of-the-mill, sort of everyday, darker beer. Whereas, this one is a little more complex. This one is better.
All right.
All right.
All right, Friday, what's next up on the big board?
Next up on the big board, we're about 4 hours in.
No, we're only 2 hours, 2 hours and 30 minutes in.
All right, so to end the podcast, we have some housekeeping, Ben.
All right, every single one of our listeners, thank you all so much for listening to our show. We truly, truly, truly appreciate it. Please go to our website, thirstandgoal.buzzsprout.com. You can subscribe to our podcast. You can listen to all of our episodes. You can check out the show notes for each episode. Get the links to all the stories that we cover, as well as links to all of the browns, the bourbons, the scotches, the beers that we taste. You can leave a review. You can link to any podcatcher out there, Spotify, Podcast, or Spotify, Pandora, CastBox, Google Podcast, Overcast, Stitcher, all of the podcatchers. You can email us directly from our website as well. If you check out the show notes, you can get links to all of our drink reviews. You can get links to our Twitter and Frane's awesome Instagram account as well. And you can check all his photographs. If you'd like to leave us a voicemail so we can play it on the air, you can call us at 818-350-2680, and we would love to hear from you. Frane, what's next up on the big board? Anything?
Nothing's left, Ben.
All right, he's laughing at me right now.
And next to a podcast, Spotify, Twitter, podcast. That was pretty hilarious.
All right, we're going to have a podcast next week.
But good luck to Sonya's Seattle Seahawks tomorrow. Jadeveon Clowney is a dirty player, but...
Is he?
No, he's not. He's not. It was unintentional.
Oh, you think he's a dirty player.
Unintentional.
All right, good luck to the Seahawks tomorrow. Good luck to Andy Reid and his Kansas City Chiefs tomorrow as well. Good luck to the Eagles and the Steelers in their offseason, but we'll see you next week.